Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. In the paint, Blog Talk Radio. And I'm Crayon. New York is filled with ballers with nasty crossovers. Jump shots that pop from half court, a block over. The break's over, the Giants and the Jets going straight to the bowl, Yankees and the Mets rolling. The Rangers and Islanders, and how can I forget the Devils and Brooklyn Nets? You know I rep my Knicks. Brain scans reveal we the most knowledgeable fans. That's why we demand more for sitting in the stands. A lot of cats be hating, who's the best but who's debating? We got a man on the street for sports conversation. In the paint, Blog Talk Radio. Go from the locker room to your headphone or stereo. Yo, them other sports shows really ain't about nothing. You got a topic, drop it, and it's open for discussion. Let me know, in the offseason, what players should we acquire? Who's hurt? Who should retire? What coach need to get fired? Hey, yo, in the paint, Blog Talk Radio. All you gotta do is call them once and let them know. And there you go. In the paint, Blog Talk Radio. Yeah. Once again, giving you the real talk in sports. In the paint, Blog Talk Radio, every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Catch my brother, Max611, Big Brother R, Cyclonus Walker. If you want to reach us by email, inthepaintradio@gmail.com, baby. And we out.
Yeah, Tuesday night. 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. is the realest show in sports. Max611, Big Brother R, Cyclonus Walker. What's up, fellas?
Okay.
Why are you laughing?
I can laugh. That's how it's America, man. That's how I'm standing. I'm entitled to do whatever I want. What?
My voice or something? You laughing at my voice?
No, I'm laughing at my man Cyclonus and his reaction.
That's his normal reaction.
Well, not normally. He's like, yeah. Trust me, I've been doing this for a minute. Okay.
What's up, Cyclonus?
Fighting the flu again.
I got a little cold, too. Tea and herbs, brother. Tea and herbs.
Don't worry. People in New York are infecting me, goddammit.
You right. I got disgusting coworkers. I know.
Well, damn, I'm the only one that's healthy. Okay.
Yeah.
Sold your soul, brother. Sold your soul.
Y'all ready
Shut
to
up.
Rock? Y'all ready to rock? We got our guests in the queue. I'm going to bring them in. We had the other two organizers on 2 weeks ago, Anthony and Karina. We got Michael Brown. He is the main organizer of the protests against Knicks owner James Dolan. I'm going to bring him in. What's up,
What's
Michael?
Going on, guys?
Your
What's
mic
up, man?
Is live. How are you tonight?
Everything is good, man. I can't complain.
You're not sick either, are you?
No, I'm not sick.
You're sick of the Knicks.
Yeah. Sick of the Knicks.
Here we go.
But hopefully, you know, this protest will, change some things.
Yeah. You know, as I was reading a lot of articles, and myself and R, we were down there also filming.
Right.
The media tried to paint it a different way. They tried to say there were about 40 people at the protest. There were more than that. There were more than 40 people. They tried to say that you guys were insignificant who set up the protest. Your thoughts on that, Michael?
Well, the media is going to be the media. I spoke to a lot of people as well, and they, you know, a lot of people didn't even know what our agenda was, you know, and it's like, okay, you didn't read the mission statement. You know, we're talking about, I was telling everybody, okay, we had a mission statement, we had everything. I said, if you're going to, you know, comment, you ask me what the, you know, mission statement is all about, and I'll tell you. But, you know, everybody was saying, oh, well, what did you, you know, what did you get out of this? And I'm like, okay, again, we had, everything was organized. It was done properly. You know, this is, you know, this is what James Dolan should have done with his organization. You know, when you have people that know what they're doing at a specific position, good things mm-hmm. happen. So we are an example of what the Knicks organization should be, and he's an example of incompetence when you have, you know, when you have things that don't work properly. The media, to answer your question, the media basically tried to downplay everything, and mm-hmm. because of the press conference.
Yes. And also, I think, you know, since Dolan is a billionaire, he probably sent his minions to speak to the Daily News, Times, and all the other big media outlets and tell them what to write, basically, which is something that those type of people would do.
Mm-hmm. I would do it, too, if I had $1 billion.
Well, the thing about James Dolan is this. He's not a I mean, he doesn't know basketball, but, you know, he didn't get where he is, even though he was inherited most of that stuff. But he learned on the way. You know, he's still an entrepreneur, you know what I mean? There's things that you learn when you're, you know, when you have that type of money, you know?
Mm-hmm.
The media controls pretty much what people think. And that's what happened in this case scenario.
Yep. Who has the background noise, if you can, please lower it. Yeah. Michael, what prompted you to go to take the steps to set up this protest?
Well, I was I've been a Knicks fan for 29 years. I originally wanted to start things with I originally was trying to do things with the NBA because I wasn't really happy with the NBA, and I started mm-hmm. this, like, I was trying to start something 3 years ago, but, you know, again, with the media controls how, you know, people's thoughts, and there's a lot of the younger generation is not familiar with, you know, Michael Jordan and Larry Bird and Magic and how things used to be in the 80s. So they pretty much take what they can get, and they get accustomed to it.
Mm-hmm.
I met up with, I was in the group with Karina and Anthony mm-hmm. and Mark as well. And there's mm-hmm. another one, her name is Rachel. And we all, you know, Karina was like, look, you know, I've been preaching this for like 3 years, but nobody really gravitated to it. Karina brought it up, and she said, you know, we should boycott MSG. And it was a joke at first, you know, because it was just like frustration and everything. But then, you know, she asked me, I told her, I was like, look, I've been talking about this for years. And I even got, you know, I've done a video on YouTube, you know, Stop Corporate Bullying in the NBA. You know,
mm-hmm.
I made superheroes out of the NBA players and stuff. And I showed her, and she was like, yo, we should get this popping. And then we partnered up with Mark and Anthony and Rachel and myself, and then we made this happen. And then we wrote the mission statement. The mission statement was given to Mark Berman.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Berman, from there, the rest is history.
Okay. Okay, I gotta commend you on it, on doing that. As you know, I'm a Knicks fan, even though we do this show and we talk about all sports, including the NBA. But I'm a diehard blue and orange guy, and we here in the paint, we also were saying, you know, one of our people, he was like, y'all need to start a boycott yourself, and you
right.
y'all stepped in and did it. And we were glad to be there and be a part of it. Do you think this is going to have any effect ongoing with the New York Knicks organization and James Dolan? Is he going to take the heed to the fans who aren't the corporate buyers of seats? You know, a lot of fans that go to these games and get all the top choice seats aren't necessarily big basketball fans. They're there to do business and be a part of the, you know, the show and be in the lights and cameras.
But see, this is the thing. See, this is what people have. This is a misconception. People think, oh, well, James Dolan is going to make money regardless because, you know, of the corporate America is who the people who buy the seats. That's true. But if you don't have, if corporate America comes in and buys all the, you know, the great seats, you got to have something surrounding corporate America, because corporate America is buying these seats so people can, so they can impress their clients.
Yep.
Now, if they, if their clients are not coming to a packed stadium or arena, that's going to make them look bad, because now it's like, okay, well, how are you trying to impress me when there's not a whole bunch of people here?
Yeah.
They're trying to do hot tickets. You know, they're trying to sell you on the city and what the city has to offer. New York City has a lot of different things, whether it's Broadway or, but it has to be a top biller. Now, if nobody's coming to see the Knicks, then how are you selling your clients?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so that's, see, a lot of people don't think from a business perspective. You have to really understand how corporate America works in order to really get at them. We had a whole big thing planned, but when he, when Mr. Dolan actually met our demands, we couldn't do it. You know what I mean? So we did the whole thing with the sheep mask to make a statement. And then the whole thing was symbolism, you know, and we take pot shots at people. You know, we took pot shots at them because that's what they do to us. So what we did in turn, it was do the same thing back to them and let them understand that we are not playing and we understand what you're doing. Just because the general public doesn't understand doesn't mean that we don't. And obviously we have our voices. Our voices was heard because we are the voice of the voiceless.
Right.
So I don't know if he got shook up by it. I don't know if he was, if it was a ploy or a publicity stunt. Can't tell. It's too early to gauge that. But at the, you know, the matter, I mean, the fact is, James Dolan has done something that he hasn't done in 7 years.
Yeah, he did a lot of stuff.
Yeah. He, you know, he conducted an interview.
Yeah.
And he addressed all of the issues. You know, this is something that nobody has done before. I mean, there was a staged rally with a protest for Isaiah, but it didn't get nearly as much press as this.
No, it didn't.
So, I mean, as far as when you want to talk about epic or you want to talk about history being made, it was made on March 19th, well, actually the 18th, because we had everything on lock, social media, newspapers, radio, that's all they were talking about. You know, so, I mean, we made an impact, and I don't think that it would be in his best interest to go against the grain when he publicly made a statement saying that he was going to give in to the, you know, he was going to, that he addressed our demand. So it wouldn't be in his best interest to go against it. So, you know, we got to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, yeah. He basically said, you know, many times on this show we have said, you know, you're not a basketball guy. He said that a long time. He said that when he first stepped into the position as chairman, that he wasn't a basketball man. So if you're not a basketball man, let those people do what they do who are basketball people. You know?
Now to think how you're not thinking like a rich person. The Knicks is his toy. Whether he knows how to play with it or not, it's his.
True,
so, you know,
true, I know that.
Ego, there's ego involved too. Some dudes won't change just not to change.
That's true.
You also have to look at his history. You have to look at James Dolan's history. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, this is public knowledge, but I mean, you know, see what type of a person he is. You know, before, he, like I said, he was inherited. You know, he inherited all of this stuff. And like you said, this is his personal toy, but there's a lot of the issues that he has. You know, he pretty much bullied the audience, the fan base, and the organization as far as, like, the management. He bullied them. I mean, you know, how do you make somebody change their agent to go CAA? And, you know, look at all the things that he did with Donnie Walsh. Like, I mean, you know, Donnie Walsh came in and pretty much resurrected the team. And, you know, because he didn't get the glory, now all of a sudden you want to fire him? You know, and then you have this media policy that you can't talk to the media. You know, and the Isaiah thing, you know, that's just, it's a lot more than people know. And if you know anything about James Dolan, you know, you go on Wikipedia and it'll tell you, you know, he has a history, you know, of being an alcoholic and stuff like
that. A drug addict.
Yeah, so he pretty much, all of that stuff is bad. You know what I'm saying? I really don't want to go into that, but it's bad. You know, you can't run a business and do things like that when you have that type of a history. And you keep that with you. You know, the whole second chance thing. You sound like you know you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, you can't keep that mentality. You have to have a specific mentality when you're running the business, and you have to let people who understand the business run the business. And you have to have people in your corner that understand. Isaiah Thomas is not somebody that he should have in his corner or should have had in his corner, in his ear, because Isaiah Thomas single-handedly bankrupted the CBA.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? Like, I mean, come on, man. He's talking about loyalty and he's talking about loyalty and everybody deserves a second chance. That's what you hear in AA. You can't run a business like that.
And also in hiring Isaiah, he hired another bully. Isaiah's bully, when Isaiah was a player, during
exactly.
The All-Star game, he's jealous of Michael Jordan. He bullied the other Eastern Conference players during that particular All-Star game when Michael was a rookie. Don't pass him the ball.
Huh.
And they complied.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, too. Like, I mean, Isaiah was a bully behind the scenes. And he used to bully his teammates as well. That's why he was, you know, he was a, you know, great player. But that's, Michael Jordan was a bully too. But
yeah.
The thing is, when you're a player and you do stuff like that, you do that because you have the incentive to win. And you have to be like that sometimes. But he had an agenda, and he met his agenda. You know, James Dolan, you know, I don't know what type of a person he is. He's very eccentric. I don't know if he wanted to be a bully intentionally, or if he was doing it because of Isaiah, or Isaiah told him, look, this is what you have to do. And I mean, I don't know. I mean, from the interviews, it doesn't seem like he's that type of person. But people have to realize what you're, you know, why we were so bad. We were so bad because, you know, you get, when you're bullied and stuff, you don't see things for what they are. And things just, you just gradually keep things, you know, you accept things. And that's, you know, people get bullied every day at their workplace. So, I mean, it's no different from being at work and watching this on sports, because this is the same thing that happened, but people just, they gravitate to it because they feel that there's nothing they can do about it.
True. What do you think, if things get bad again, say things don't work out with Phil Jackson, will you guys do another boycott? And the paint will be there if you do.
Yeah, we will. We definitely will. Because, I mean, look, this is the thing. You can't see, James Dolan has a history of getting high-profile people.
Yep.
And going for a quick fix.
Right.
Okay? You have to learn at some point that you can't do that. Now, the person that we had, the best, well, there's two coaches, the longest tenure coaches, I don't know if you guys know this or not, the longest tenure coach was Red Holtzman.
Right.
Right. Now, the second longest tenured coach was Jeff Van Gundy.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was homegrown. Nobody knew about Jeff Van Gundy before.
No.
He, you know, but he's homegrown. And how well did he do? Took us to the NBA Finals. Now, the thing about it is, you got to go within the organization. You know how many people we have within our organization that have gone, left the organization, and been successful?
For sure.
Steve Clifford, Pat Riley, Mark Jackson. It is a number of guys.
Tom Thibodeau is one.
Right, exactly.
He's a main name. But see, this is what I'm. These are homegrown people. These are people that you should have been working with in the first place to and finding positions for these people. So this organization wouldn't be in the shambles.
But good point.
You know, but when you're looking for high profile and you're looking for the home run hit every time, you miss out on things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's the thing that I was saying about, you know, about this guy. Like, you know, he doesn't have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
You have to get, when you have an organization, you have a business, you have to surround yourself around people. You have to surround yourself with people that are basketball people or whatever the organization that you are. In this case, is basketball. You have to surround yourself with basketball, with great basketball minds. You know, and that's how you become successful. Look at Jerry Krause. Jerry Krause and Phil Jackson did not get along at all.
Okay.
But they got 6 rings.
Right.
Type of thing you're supposed to have. That you see, and he doesn't pay attention to that.
Right. You know, like I said, you bring up I totally agree with you when you're saying about the homegrown talent and whatnot, and having them be a very integral part of the organization. You know, Patrick Ewing should have been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Charles Oakley should have been there in some capacity. I agree with you, Michael. So. You know, this is something that he definitely needs to pay attention to, you know, and maybe, hopefully, Phil can impart that wisdom to him and make him understand this is what needs to be done.
Yes, look at the coaching tree from, and you know, guys, Phil has mentored and helped grow like a Byron Scott, a Brian Shaw, a Kurt Rambis. Those guys are still in Los Angeles. Kurt Rambis is still in Los Angeles. And I agree with you, Michael. That's what you do. That's how you build a free-flowing, ever-evolving organization. And like you said, you know, you tell Pat Riley, I'm not going to give you free reign. He leaves. You fire Dave Checkitz, who also helped build us through the 90s. You fire both those men. You fire, let them leave, and you bring in Isaiah Thomas, and you let Isaiah Thomas do whatever he wants, and he brings you a Nuka Brown, right, Cyclonus?
Hello.
Yeah, you know, I was talking about Isaiah Thomas and a Nuka Brown travesty. You let that dude have a reign of power, and he brings sexual harassment charges.
Well,
yeah, but then here you go with the AA. Everybody deserves a second chance.
Exactly. You know,
I think it's deeper than that. I just think Isaiah knows something about Jim we don't know. That's what I think.
Well, that could be it too. I mean, who knows? This whole thing was just a big soap opera and a big mess, and it needs to be cleaned up, man. Because after you know, well, just one thing. Pat Riley, he wanted free reign, but he also wanted 25% ownership as well.
That's
why he
walked. Okay, that's a little too much. He only he got a small percentage in Miami. 25 is a you bugging.
Yeah, he wanted that's another. A lot of people don't know that either. So, right.
But you know what? You know what? I would have bought it with him on that. He came high. That's an extremely high percentage. I'd have said, how about 5? And then we meet somewhere around 7-8, which is what he has in Miami, I believe.
I don't think he wanted. I mean, that's what he asked for. Mm-hmm. I don't think mm-hmm. I didn't think he expected he was going to get that. He just put that up there.
Right.
And if
they
put an offer, he just wanted ownership. He wanted full control and he wanted ownership.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, he just threw a number out there, but they didn't budge. And they couldn't come to anything. They couldn't come to an agreement. And, I mean, Pat was on board. He said, I'll turn around the franchise. But, you know, I want something. I mean,
I can't blame him for that.
Yeah, me neither.
I'd at least
have a great conversation with him.
Yeah, they didn't even do that. They didn't even get to that. That's what I'm saying. Like, they didn't even entertain that. I mean, you know, from what I read, it was like, you know, Dave Chekich was trying to talk to him, but they did not come to any agreement. They couldn't come to any terms in regards to that. They wanted him to just coach, and he didn't want that. He wanted more.
Right.
I mean, look at what he's done with Miami.
Yeah. Mickey Arison, the Miami owner, he said, I let Pat do what Pat does. He said, I'm good at business. I'm not particularly a thorough basketball man. And look, he's reaping even more rewards because the Miami Heat franchise was a franchise that was, you know, in the red.
Mm-hmm.
They had serious financial problems. Not anymore.
Well, I don't know because I heard the owner said that they're still in the red though because of that.
Okay.
He said they won a championship and they're still red, but regardless of the fact, they have two championships.
Right.
That's the bottom line. Like, you know what I mean? Like, the NBA is they are a team that is recognizable, and they are still out there. Like, you know, they're a team to be reckoned with. The Knicks are not like that. You know, the Knicks go totally by their name and their name alone. And, you know, they should be a dynasty. You know, you're the number one ranked team. You're worth $1.1 billion.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
You're valued
only because
at
they're in New York. Only because they're in New York.
Exactly. How are you not relevant?
If the Knicks was anywhere else, they would have been bankrupt and disbanded.
Good evening, gentlemen. Can I say something?
Ah, okay. Yes. I'll bring you in.
Go ahead, Richard.
There was a time, I've been listening to your discussion, and you've been very much on point on pretty much everything. But I didn't hear anything, unless it was something that I missed earlier, but I didn't hear anything about Dave DeBuscher. He was GM for a while, and he drafted
Patrick Ewing.
He drafted Patrick Ewing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why was I forget the exact storyline, but why was he let go?
Well, they were losing back early in Pat's career.
The back office of the Knicks is poisonous. That's why it's bad back there.
Well, that had nothing to do with James Dolan. James Dolan didn't take over control fully until 99.
The culture of that back office is multi-generational. It doesn't matter.
Well, yeah.
And that's the thing which I enjoyed listening to while you were discussing the homegrown talent that the Knicks had,
mm-hmm.
Where we could have kept DeBuscher as GM possibly and avoided a couple of the guys.
I'll name some names. Al Bianchi.
Jeff Van Gundy being a bench coach Tom Thibodeau being a bench coach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these are guys that should have been, I don't know, I guess compensated, dealt with, catered to, so they don't leave.
Yeah.
The way they did.
Some of those guys wanted to come back. Like Thibodeau wanted to. He did interview for the job. They passed him over twice.
I remember that.
Yeah, because he wasn't a big name. He wasn't a big name, and we didn't have the talent. Like James Dolan was just trying to fill seats. He wasn't caring about the actual infrastructure, the complexion of the team. He just wanted a big name. Okay, yo, look at what he did with Carmelo Anthony. Why would you interfere with, you know, with Donnie Walsh? Like, he's a respected GM. Why would you? I mean, he's team president. He does. He knows what he's doing. Look what he's done with Indiana.
Right.
I mean, you know, he's respected. He knows what he's doing, and he was recommended by the commissioner. Of the NBA.
The commissioner go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying, why would you go against that?
This is also the man who, you know, the commissioner told him, "Yo, you might have to sell the team because, like we've said, you know, New York is that's the number one franchise. It should be always competing." You know, for the top spot in the NBA, a la like the Yankees and a la like the Giants every 5 years.
Mm-hmm. 15 years, man. 15 years of total
chaos.
Man, listen.
And
ineptitude. Is light. That's being nice.
Chaotic and inept.
That's being nice.
Yeah, it is, man. I mean, we've had some really bad, bad years, man.
Yes, sir.
I mean, it was horrible. I mean, it was, I couldn't stomach
you mean,
it. Man.
You mean the Othella Harrington and Howard Eisley years?
Howard
the Layton years?
Oh, my God.
Why do you Knicks fans do it to yourselves?
I mean
this team is having this effect on you. Why do it to yourself?
It builds character, man. Like, you can't, like, when we get, you know, I mean, we spoil. We got the Yankees.
Yes,
you know,
sir.
Giants. I mean, I'm a Jets fan, so I get, you know.
Teams. Being a Knicks fan is like being sent to hell.
It's really bad, man. And I'm fortunate enough to be, you know, to be born in the 90s. I mean, in the 70s. So I was able to see the 90s and understand how the 90s was and see when we were the number one defense in the league, when we were the most feared team in the league, and then people were afraid to come to play in Madison Square Garden, you know.
Thank God you corrected that 90s thing. I thought you was one of these millennials. I was about to go.
Nah. I mean, it was bad, man. Like, the thing is, I thought those were bad because, we always used to lose. Like, I was like, man, like, yo, this is, you know, bad. But you don't know bad until you are in the basement. Like, we pretty much are like Golden State and the L.A. Clippers.
Wow.
Close. And they're better than us. They've been bad for decades.
I said that 3 weeks ago.
look how time changes. Like, they're competitive now.
Because somebody had a plan. Nobody in New York had a plan.
Well, like Michael said, and like we've said on the show, you know, hiring big names, you know, and D'Antoni, again, the Lakers did it too. They got caught up in that's a big name. He's been to the playoffs. He has a good offense, but he's not a good coach.
He broke Kobe.
you know how you want to talk about D'Antoni? You want to know the list of people that this guy broke?
Man,
I mean, just with the Knicks, man. Stoudemire, Jeremy Lin. I mean, come on, man. It's just like, you know, he doesn't fit the complexion of the team. You can't have nobody like that here.
Especially New York, we like hard nosed, scrappy defensive teams like the Giants, the old Knicks in the 90s, the Knicks in the 70s. That's how we are as New Yorkers. We predicated towards that.
Yes, we do like defense. Got to include the Jets. Jets had defense. Shaq exchange. And I equate New Jersey Devils as a New York team also.
We give them tri-state love. That's about it.
I'm a hockey fan. I don't know if anybody else is an ice hockey fan here in this world, but I'm a big ice hockey fan.
I'm a Ranger fan, just because I'm from New York, but I don't really follow them like that. I couldn't tell you who's on the team. But, I mean, you know, hockey is only good. You can only watch hockey, like, in, you know, when it's the Olympics and stuff like that, because that's when all the good players are playing.
Go to a game. I went to a Ranger game, and this is the curse of Dolan. This must have been around 2004, 2005, is when they had the I forget the brother's name, brother with locks, and I had locks at the time.
Oh, the black dude.
Somebody gave me seats right behind the goalie. I couldn't get anybody to go with me. As you know, being a brother, I couldn't find none of my people to go. I called Cyclonus. He was, hell no, whatever. Click.
I don't remember that.
That's
an out-and-out lie.
But, nah, I called people, and nobody went. I didn't know you then, Richard. I would have asked you, brother. But sitting there in the front row, there were a lot of seats empty. I'm finished.
The ironic thing about that is James Dolan is not a part of that at all. He lets them run that organization. The Rangers are bad because of, you know, that's not Dolan's fault. They have full control.
Glenn Saver has something on Jim Dolan, and it goes further back. It goes further back when before James Dolan suggested to Glenn Saver to hire a former Islander, Dennis Poffin, as a Ranger coach, and that backfired in Jim Dolan's face, and Glenn Saver, you know, took him behind. The storyline is Glenn Saver took him behind and closed doors and let him pass. But there's something else that people have on Jim Dolan. Mac, I've been to a few Ranger games back when the Islanders were hot, and I can tell you, it can get ugly.
No, I have fun.
No doubt you have fun.
I can't watch it on TV, though.
I went there. Basically, they root for the black guy because he was known for fighting. So they were rooting for him, waiting for him to fight. I went to the game.
Who's that, Brashear?
Yeah.
That was Donald Brashear, right?
Yes.
Okay.
I couldn't think of his name, but when I heard it, I
Donald Brashear.
Right. Yeah.
And we had a goalie, Steve Weeks.
Yeah, I vaguely remember him. But that's what he was known for. And that was the only black guy on there. So, I mean, you know, And when he got a chance, he fought. That's what everybody was, you know, got up for. But I went to a hockey game and I fell asleep. So, I just can't. I can't do that.
Wow.
All right, gentlemen. I tell you, I want to thank Michael. You know what I'm saying, Michael Brown. You know, one of the main organizers for the that rally, the protest at MSG. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
thank you, Michael.
I appreciate you guys for coming. I appreciate you guys for having me and for you guys coming out and supporting. And you know, we need to have more
yes,
people
sir.
Like you to come out and support.
Well, we definitely will, Michael. I don't want to get rid of you. You know, unless you have something to do, I want to invite you to stay on. With us,
okay.
You know what I'm saying, and we could discuss, you know, we'd like to hear your views on the various topics that we have here on the show tonight. So do you want to stay with us?
Sure.
Okay, fantastic. So we're going to move on, and we're going to do a little baseball real quick. We're going to talk about Mr. Matt Harvey and his rehab issues with the New York Mets management, you know. Go ahead, Mac. You can start off, brother.
Okay. I was when I announced when I set up the show, I don't know if the Mets management was reading my mind and they got scared because I was gonna go out on them, because previously they were against having Matt Harvey do his rehab. He had the Tommy John surgery towards labrum in his elbow and shoulder, and they were adamant about sending him to Florida to do his rehab. He has stated he wanted to stay in New York, bond with the team, as well as bond with the catcher on the team, and also study other teams and study hitters and just, you know, study as a student of the game while he rehabs. I think that's very astute of him and very smart as a player. Because you don't get to do that during rehab. You're rehabbing and you're away from the team, so you're not around. And then when you come back, you have to get in the grind, and you haven't been studying other teams as the season's been going on. I think that's smart of him. And also, you know, he wants to be in the limelight. He's got a model girlfriend. He loves the nightlife in New York. He wants to be the New York Mets version of Derek Jeter, so I'm all with that.
Derek Jeter or Joe Namath?
Either or.
Wow.
He wants to wants to be that dude.
Nobody wants to be Joe. Joe was out of control. He couldn't survive in the new millennium the way he was acting.
he got fired
and arrested.
What I mean by
throwing Joe Namath's name out there, Joe Namath wants to be in the limelight. He was always in a commercial.
Broadway Joe.
He wanted to be surrounded by four or five pretty women. He wanted a pretty girl on his arm. Now, Matt Harvey, by contrast, is that the right word?
Yeah,
now, Matt Harvey,
in the same
light, he's been pictured with several pretty women. He's had a somewhat naked cover photo on a magazine.
Sports Illustrated.
And, thank you. And if it's what he's stating, when he wants to travel with the team, stay in New York, it's somewhat unheard of.
Mm-hmm.
How many players have ever really spoken out, say, yeah, I can rehab in New York? We got a training facility there. There's a training facility at City Field. Why can't I rehab at City Field instead of being secluded in Florida?
Right.
As long as he keeps his focus on his rehab, I don't see a problem. But I think the biggest issue is that somebody told Sandy Allison, no, I don't want to do it this way. I want to do it this way.
Matt Harvey sets a bad precedent.
coordinator in the back office.
And see, I'm glad you just brought that up, Cyclones, because, you know, as reading this article, a few articles, and I've also, you know, read the comments that fans, you know, leave as well. And one thing that stuck out to me is the fact that now is it going to be a problem? You know, somebody said it's going to be hard to manage now. You know, and I'm like,
well, you know what? Let me drop this in real quickly. Mm-hmm. His teammates respect him. He's well respected in the locker room, and he's popular mm-hmm. in the locker room. So
okay.
I don't think it's a problem. And what mm-hmm. Cyclonus is right saying that he's setting a bad precedent. Say Zach Wheeler gets hurt, and Zach is also one of their big names and destined to be mm-hmm. a star. I want the Matt Harvey treatment. I'm rehabbing in New York. He can do that, but Ruben Tejada can't. Not until he bats above the Mendoza line. He can't do nothing like that. Neither can Lucas Duda or Ike Davis, because they aren't
okay.
the superstars of the team.
So again, is this going to pull? Could this be a potential problem? You know what I mean? Because when you talk about this stuff and as precedents being set, you know, Johan Santana and Pedro Martinez. They've never had to go through that. You know what I'm saying? They were always in Port St. Lucie, in Florida. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking
mm-hmm.
about two Cy Young Award winners. So,
mm-hmm.
yeah, I just want to throw that in there real quick, you know? I wonder, is Mike still there, Mike Brown?
Yeah,
he's
I'm
still
here. I'm listening.
Okay, I was wondering if you know, we don't want to be, you know, too rude or whatnot and want you to join in or whatnot.
I'm listening. The Mets organization is, you know, they're similar to the Knicks. You know, they
okay.
have a lot of issues, man. Like, you know,
yes,
with,
would
the,
you?
with the, you know, the whole thing with their medical staff and
mm-hmm.
you know, what is the big issue with somebody wanting to train? Why would you want him away from the team?
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, it should make a difference. They make so much, they make a big deal out of nothing. And, I mean,
mm-hmm.
the whole Matt Harvey thing, like I heard that he was tweeting information on
yes.
Twitter, and they got mad at him.
Yeah,
right.
Like, and I'm like, well, why would you get mad at him? He's a star. He's
mm-hmm.
a star. He's one of your star players. So what do you think he's going to do? This is what, you know, this is social network. This is the end thing right now. This is what they do. It's not like he did anything really, really bad, like, you know, any racial slurs or, you know, anything
right.
like that. You can't get mad at stuff like that. That's what I'm saying. Like, the organization, they are just a travesty. And, I mean, thank God I'm not a Mets fan. I don't think I could take being a Knick and a Mets fan. That's, you know, I'd be splitting my wrist, man.
I hear you, brother. I hear you.
Yeah, here's another thing they did last week. This, which is what prompted me to want to talk about Matt Harvey. Last week he was giving an interview to a Daily News reporter, and one of their officials came over and was standing over him, like, you know, he got to leave. And Matt said, "Yo, I'm talking to him. He's my guy. He's one of the, you know, one of the journalists that I can trust and won't log me out. And you treat that guy, you know, like he's scum." And Matt kept telling Jay Horowitz, "Yo, I'm not. Oh, why are you still standing here? I'm not done yet. Relax." And then they also went and took his locker in spring training, and they put it somewhere near the shower room to keep him away from the media. Now, you want to keep the face, one of the positive faces of your team. You want him to speak to the media as much as possible if you're smart. And also, you know, the Mets say they want 90 wins. I don't see it this year.
That ain't happening. They ain't getting 90 wins. They lucky they get 80.
Wow.
And they're not getting no end. They're not getting. They got too many injuries. For one. Look, man, media relation is very important when you have an organization. You can't not, you cannot, that was one of our, you know, our demands. You cannot have an organization and not speak to the media. You have to have a rapport with your fan base. Because if you don't have a rapport with the fan base, how they're not going to know what's going on. And if they don't know what's going on, why would they buy a ticket to come see? Like, because you're going to get frustrated sooner or later. And when you have an organization that's bad at, like, the Mets, like, I mean, I'm surprised people still go.
And, well, they got a brand new stadium, so.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Like, that's another reason why. You know, you're spending all of this money, and you're pouring all this money into the arena.
Stadium. Yeah.
Your stadium, rather. So it's just like, if you go into the, if you're pouring all this money into it, your fan base is going to want to know, okay, well, why should we spend the money to come in here when the product is not good? We're not coming here to go to the stadium. We're here to see the team.
I've been to the new stadium, and what I noticed at a game, people weren't really watching the game because the Mets probably were losing. People were at concessions and all the other added features at the stadium and barely watching the game.
See, that's bad. That's a bad thing. I mean, look how many new stadiums we have, man. I mean, just new arena stadium.
Yeah.
There's Brooklyn.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
MSG.
Yankee. Mm-hmm.
Yankees. So it's like, you got all of these new things. Now, out of all of the three, well, I named four. So two of them are good. Two, the products is good. And, well, I should say one because Brooklyn ain't that good. They only got 37 wins, and everybody's making a big deal about that. But, you know,
oh, boy. There we go. Oh, man. I can see you're going to get into a little spirited conversation a little later.
I mean, you can't spend, if you're going to spend the money on the stadiums or the arena, you have to put out a good product because that's what people are coming to see. Nobody's coming in there. People are going to spend the money in the concession and everywhere else if they can see a good product.
Uh-huh.
You know how much it costs to go into Madison Square Garden to just to eat or Yankee Stadium?
Yo, I haven't. I haven't been in MSG in a minute. Me and R went to a Jet game was it 2 years ago, R?
Yeah, I think it was
a year and a half
ago. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, when we went to MetLife.
Right.
That stadium doesn't impress me. It's just, whatever.
I've never been to Shea Stadium or the new
City Field.
City Field. I've never been neither. I mean, I've never been a Mets fan. I've been a Yankee fan all my life, but I've never been there. But the thing is, like, I went to, what was it? Yankee Stadium. They wanted $15 for a Philly cheesesteak.
What?
Yeah.
$15 for a Philly cheesesteak. No drink. That's just for the Philly cheesesteak. No drink.
Wow.
It's
crazy.
It's like $10 for beer.
Yeah.
You know, give or take, you know, three or five. Like, yo, you got to be kidding. I mean, at least they got a good product, though.
Right, true that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Remember,
but
I remember years ago, I took my goddaughter to a Liberty game, and I've taken her to a Knick game. And I was like, yo, get your backpack. She was like, why am I taking? I said, get your backpack. So we took the backpack before we went to the game. We bought our food and drinks, and she was like, oh, she saw the prices. Oh, I got you, Godfather.
You was going to let your goddaughter take the charge. Ain't you a piece of work?
Well, this was back when you could do that. You could
before 9/11. You go to jail for that now.
Yeah, so.
Mac, don't feel bad. I did the same thing with my daughter. For a Liberty game. I'm serious. Good place to go meet women. I'm telling you, good place to go meet women. Go to a Liberty game.
He's right.
Yes.
But back on topic. Just the Mets is an organization, you know, they wanna be competitive. They wanna be like the Yankees, but you're not spending money in the right places. And the product isn't that good. You got to spend money to have a good product.
Right.
Well, the thing about them is they're saying that they don't have the money to spend, which I don't understand how that's possible.
How you get a new stadium.
Yeah, there's a lot of different things that they're saying that they don't have. They don't have the money. Now, they keep selling people on 2015, okay? Now, it's curious to me. I'm curious to see what's going to happen in 2015 because you got a severe amount of injuries to key players. So I want to see what's going to happen because what happens if Matt Harvey is not the same player?
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens if you get some more injury? Because they have significant amount of injuries already.
Yeah. Okay.
What's gonna happen in 2015? Like you're saying you don't have money. So what's gonna happen now when 2015 comes and you get money? So, mysteriously you get money now. Now what's gonna happen to the players that you have that are injured?
Well, nobody wants them.
You know what? My thing with that, Mike, is you know, their farm system, they got some players in the farm system that are damn near, if not major league ready already. You understand what I'm saying? Especially on the pitching side. You know what I mean? So, I mean, and that's a problem I think a lot of baseball organization would love to have. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah. But
I mean...
Mm-hmm. You're selling. I mean, you're right about that. Their farm is pretty good, but you also said something that's key. They're not ready. They're not ready yet. But you're selling. If you listen to the Mets, everything that they say is 2015. So these people, this farm is not going to be ready in 2015. So what does the fan base have to look forward to is what I'm asking. Are they going to miraculously be like the Yankees and start spending money or to get talent? Or do they have something that they're not telling people that is going to get them to the, World Series? Or because people, the Met fans have been waiting for years and years and years, and they haven't even been competitive. Now, they've had a glimpse of competitiveness, and then they taper off.
Right.
That's because they don't spend their money in the right places, and they don't take care of – they don't keep players they should keep. I'm going to name some names. They should have kept Darryl Strawberry. You replace him with Bobby Bonilla. Bad move.
Yeah, that was very bad.
Bad move. Bad move.
We could possibly name an all-star team with the players that the Mets have given.
Oh, please. You got that right.
Given history.
You have Jose Reyes most recently. You decided, you know what? We'll pay David Wright. The Dominican kid can go. And I don't know if it was racially motivated like that, but once he left, the Mets have not been the same since he left. He was part of the key.
Well,
I like David
neither
White.
Has Jose Reyes. He ain't been the same since he left the Mets.
Well, you're right, too. He's been a little dinged up, injured. He had a good year last year. He had a decent year last year. But
I just personally think that they you know, both parties needed each other. You know, I really believe that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I agree with what you said.
Well, you know what I would have did? I wouldn't have let him walk. What I would
no,
have
they
done,
didn't even...
They didn't even
speak to him. They didn't even offer him a contract. They just let him leave.
I would have traded him. I would have signed him and traded him and got value for him. That's what Dolan did. That's what Dolan did with Jeremy Lin. You can't do stuff like that, man. Yeah. I mean, Jose Reyes is Jose. I mean, look, Jose Reyes is he has flaws, but regardless of the fact, he's still he's still tangible. You know, he's still apparent. You know, and he's going the way he plays. He's not going to, he's not going to last too much longer the way he plays unless he can reinvent himself. And I don't think he can do that. But the fact is, you don't let a talent like that walk when you're not good. The Yankees can do that, and not be,
Yeah, they let Granderson leave, picked up Ellisberry.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. They're going to spend money. You're not going to – the Mets can't afford to let no talent go. They can't – You know, I don't know, man. Like, I can't even. I mean, look. I get heart palpitations just talking about it now, and I'm not even a fan. I can imagine what's going through the Met fans' mind right now, with all the stuff.
I have a friend. He buys season tickets to Met games. He buys four seats for him and his three boys.
Four.
So he buys four seats.
Wow.
And they ain't bad seats either. You know, he's an average guy like us, working man. And he's taking, you know, during school season, he can't take, when school is in session, he can't always take the kids to the night games, so he'll invite me, and I'll go. And I'm like, dog, you spent how much for this? And they listen?
That's what I'm saying. It's bad.
Yeah. Let's move on, because... We done closed it out on the Mets and what they need to do and things they need to do. I'm going to turn the mic over to Cyclonus. We're going to talk a little boxing, MMA, the Tyson Fury thing with Derek Chisora, and anything else you have to add, Cyclonus.
Starting off, I don't believe you talked about the Knicks and the Mets back-to-back. That just depressed me. Sad team. Yeah, but Tyson Fury is hilarious. Him and Derek.
Oh, my God.
But Tyson Fury is the new British version of Mayorga. He's funny as hell, but he has no boxing ability. The only thing that's saving him is he's a giant. Dude is like 6'9", 270 pounds. That's the only thing that's saving him, because Steve Cunningham put him on his ass last year. Steve Cunningham, he's a glorified cruiserweight. So that's how bad Tyson Fury is. But him and Derek Chisora, the build-up to the fight will be the fight. The actual fight's going to be garbage. But those two going at it, taking jibs at each other, it's going to be hilarious. Now, say Tyson Fury beats Derek Chisora, which he should, because Derek Chisora is, he has heart, but he's a journeyman. He'll have to potentially fight either Chris Arreola or Dante Wilder, two dudes that'll beat the brakes off of him. So, Derek Chisora will be there.
Dante Wilder is a guy we covered last week before last, right?
Yeah, knocked out a guy in what, 60 seconds with a left hand.
Yeah. I don't think they're ready for that guy. That guy, his punching power is. Ooh.
Yeah, well, heavyweight division is basically dead. We need some type of life.
Pretty much.
Tyson Fury's trying to give a life with his antics, but his in-ring performance is horrible.
Let me just say this real quick about Tyson Fury, man. Okay, the man is 22-0. Okay, that's a good record. He got 16 KOs, whatever. But I went over his list of opponents, and I came away very unimpressed. You know, me and Cyclonus, we talked about this a little bit earlier today. I think, what was the guy's name? Steve Cunningham, correct? Cyclonus?
Yeah.
Repeat that?
Steve Cunningham, right?
Yeah.
Was the most impressive name up on there, besides Derek Chisora, you know, because they had faced each other before previously.
Like I said, Derek Chisora is a journeyman. That's it. Steve Cunningham is a good win, but are you really going to brag about beating the cruiserweight in your 270 pounds?
Exactly.
And the cruiserweight was winning until you knocked him out?
Exactly. That's embarrassing. But those are the two most notable names that I noticed on that list. And I'm like, man, this guy, he's just a facade of a heavyweight.
Well,
he may have it in size-wise, but I'm talking skills and whatnot.
He knows that
I don't think he has it.
He knows that.
Do I?
He knows that himself.
No doubt. But he's putting on a front. You know, that's all it is. Because
he even talked about fighting Mayweather.
Oh, my God.
Said he could beat Mayweather in 5 seconds. Should be, and you got 150 pounds on him, but
yeah,
him and Mayweather were the same size.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be a fight.
I think you and I would put our money still on Mayweather.
Yeah. Wouldn't bet nothing on Tyson Fury. But mm-hmm. That just tells you how weak the heavyweight division is. A couple of years ago, Evander Holyfield, when he was in Germany, didn't he beat the brakes off of that 7-foot Russian? I forget the guy's name.
Yeah, he did.
So, and that was old. That was old man Holyfield. Young Holyfield with Rex Shop on this new crop of heavyweights, Klitschko's included. It's just, I don't know what happened to the big dudes. They can't throw hands anymore.
No.
I know we went over this before. Is Dante Wilder the future of the heavyweight division?
He'll have to fight a log body. That means the Areolas and the Klitschko's of the world, and he'll have to win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Without that, he's just another contender.
I was going to say he's another, what do you call it? He's another, what's that boy's name?
What, Seth
Marquez
Mitchell?
Jr. I'm going to tell you why, too, man. Like I said, what's his record again? 44-0?
Oh, you talking about Chavez Jr.?
Yeah. He got.
I wouldn't compare nobody. Chavez Jr. is in his own lane of suckiness.
Son, I have to, because he has won so many fights by knockout. But I'm like, okay, who have you faced? I'm like, again, you boxing cats up in a Harlem gym or something like that that's getting, you know, ESPN9 coverage? I'm like, come on, seriously? Really?
Hey, you know, this is what it is.
I got to throw that out there, man.
Well, the whole new promotional game of boxing is the undefeated fighter, no matter the weight division.
Right.
As long as you're undefeated, they'll build a marketing campaign against about you. Or he knocked out this amount of people. He's never been defeated, blah, blah, blah. Not realizing he fought cab drivers, janitors, and guys.
There you go. There you go.
So that's what boxing's turned into now. I understand it, but, you know, it takes away from the sport. But they got to do what they got to do with MMA out there.
Yeah. Anything else, Cyclonus? Any other news in boxing?
Sergio Martinez said if he beats Cotto, he might potentially retire. He had a good run.
Well,
Sergio was a good champion. He had, for the last 4 years, he's been racked with injuries. You know, his body is breaking down, so this really should be his last fight. But people are now saying he's ducking Triple G, Gennady Golovkin. What point is, you know what? Sergio, he ran a gauntlet. He fought Paul Williams, Pavlik, young Margarito, and others. He fought a young Centron. He has nothing to prove in boxing. He fought a bunch of champions. So if the man wants to retire at 39 if he beats Cotto, that's more power to him. He had a great career. He ain't ducking nobody.
Yeah, and also Cotto should retire. He's also another guy. I wouldn't say he was A-list, but he was a B-list fighter who you know, he got some. He won some and he lost some.
Cotto was an A-list fighter.
You know, he lost some to some of those guys, and he won some.
Yeah.
He needs to retire.
Down, man. He was up and down too much, man.
I think Cotto never recovered from when Margarito beat him with the plaster on his hand. That took time off of his career.
He's been in a few wars.
Nah, but the Margarito fight did the damage.
Nobody
recovers from nothing like that. So Margarito should technically be in prison, but it is what it is.
Yeah.
He got beat up bad behind that. I never seen nothing like that in my life.
Yeah. Your face is busted open with fists. You know something is wrong. Yeah. Man, God knows how long Margarito was cheating. But oh well.
Yeah.
He was with Bob Arum, so he was protected.
What else do you have, Cyclonus?
Your favorite fighter, Amir Khan.
Not my favorite fighter.
He's on the Mayweather undercard. He's supposed to fight Luis Collazo, and he's not talking about Luis Collazo. He's still talking about Mayweather like he deserves that fight. He's looking past Luis Collazo. So I think I'm a gamble on that fight. I'm betting on Luis Collazo to whoop his ass. I'm about sick of Amir Khan.
What round are you predicting?
I give Luis Collazo round 8.
Out?
Yeah. Amir has a horrible chin. Amir has great speed.
That.
He has great speed, great punching power. That's it. His chin is horrible. His footwork is horrible. And he's looking past a hungry guy with nothing to lose. That's just stupid.
Yeah. I've seen who did Collazo fight last? A
couple of months ago, he beat Victor Ortiz.
Yeah, I saw that fight.
Yo, what
Victor wasn't
Victor
vicious
Ortiz?
That night.
What happened to him? Ever since he fought Mayweather, he's been on a downward spiral.
It was before Mayweather's with the Maidana fight when he quit in the ring. He's a head case.
Yeah,
he's a head case.
I don't think his heart
case.
Is really in it.
Plus, he has daddy issues. All kinds of things is going on. Victor Ortiz. Hope he saved his money. Really hope he saved his money.
Yeah.
Boxing career is over.
Yeah, boxing is not that's not it's not like it used to be, man.
Nah, no way, it's gone.
No,
it's not. It's gone. You know, I don't even half of these fighters. I don't even know who you're talking about. I'm like, yo, and in the heavyweight division, I'm like, who?
A non-existent heavyweight division. There's a bunch of dudes who should be playing basketball or something, or playing football, because they built like offensive linemen and centers.
I don't know, man.
You guys,
got too much going on in boxing now.
Yeah. Well, the best big men in America, they're playing basketball and football.
Yeah, or wrestling.
It takes your whole. You have to dedicate your whole life to be a boxer. Dudes aren't doing that anymore.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Heavyweight division.
They could be incarcerated also.
That too. Well, you know what? Before, man. You know, when, and you were heavyweight champion of the world, man. You were it. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You were walking on water.
There you go. You thank you, Richard. You understand? Now, I mean, it's the welterweight division that's now, you know, basically the crown jewel, so to speak, you know.
And it's still not – Muhammad Ali is probably the most – since Michael Jackson is dead, Muhammad Ali is probably the most famous person on earth.
Mm-hmm.
We'll never see nothing like that again in boxing. Not even Floyd being the number one athlete, he's still no Ali. He'll never reach that level.
Because Floyd – He picks and chooses fights. He don't fight.
All champions, one form or another, does that. So I'm not going to criticize Floyd for that.
Yeah, there's
other things to criticize Floyd for.
That's the era we're in, Michael. This era of boxing. If you want to be successful, you don't fight the up and coming dude who's wrecking shop in the on the undercard. You fight a dude who's been weathered and beaten, and you add him on to your collection of wins, and you move on. You might have one or two big name fights, and they all pick and choose, like Cyclonus is saying.
No, I got that, but you can't call yourself great if
I agree
you
with you
do stuff like that.
Sugar Ray did it. Sugar Ray did it.
That's the thing that's the problem that I have with Floyd Mayweather. You know, he's calling himself, "Oh, I'm the best that ever did it." Blah blah blah. Yeah, but okay.
Well, Sugar Ray did it. Manny Pacquiao did it the worst. He beat all the people he beat in his current form is all guys coming off of losses, or it was at a catchweight. He's the worst example.
Well, Sugar Ray Leonard beat all of his contemporaries.
He didn't fight Aaron Pryor. He lost the second Hearns fight, even though they called it a draw. He waited for Hagler to get old. He admitted that.
You know,
he fought Benitez in a war and never revisited Benitez.
Sugar Ray was Floyd before Floyd.
Oh, hold on, gentlemen. Gentlemen. I gotta break in here. Let's have everybody, express their views and whatnot, please.
All right, Coach.
I would have stayed away from Aaron Pryor too. Aaron Pryor was
the
Hulk. Aaron Pryor was very scary.
That was a vicious 135, 140 pound cokehead.
Yeah.
Who did he fight? What's the Hispanic boxer?
Well,
Cyclone?
Aguayo, Alexis Aguayo.
Yeah, that was a great fight. That dude was, he scared me. I used to sit with, I was a kid. I sit with my uncle. I said, wow, why does he punch like that? Because I was sitting there going, he punching a little too hard.
Oh, well.
Like, you know, that's the Hulk.
All right, let's move on to MMA real quick. Y'all hear about Ronda Rousey challenging Floyd Mayweather to a fight sapping a couple of weeks back?
Yeah, what is all of that about, man?
What's up with chicks? First off, any athlete, male or female in MMA, if you're going to challenge Floyd to a fight, be fair. Challenge him to a boxing match, then he fights you in an MMA fight. Don't invite him to come to your playground for a little bit of money and you beat him by wrestling. We know you could do that, but can you box him? They never do that. Come to MMA,
yeah,
Floyd,
most,
I'll beat you.
Yeah, most MMA fighters are not strikers. They're not good.
I know, they're horrible
at
striking.
Yeah, they're learning how to do that.
Only John Jones, Anderson Silva, and Cain Velasquez have some boxing ability in Rampage Jackson. Everybody mm-hmm. else is just horrible.
Yeah, their striking is terrible. That's why you see a lot of – I mean, I do MMA. I see a lot of, you know, the gyms are like combined now, and you know, a lot of them are working on their striking ability and everything. But it's just like, yo, I wouldn't fight Floyd Mayweather in a boxing match.
Yeah, that's why. That's
that?
Why Ronda should shove. And second, for women out there, now if Floyd said, hey, I'll challenge Ronda Rousey. He'll imagine the hellstorm that would come with that. Why is a woman calling out a man? No.
That's because he's too cocky, and nobody likes Floyd Mayweather. I mean, they respect him. But, I mean, he's cocky, he's arrogant, and you know that's just a publicity thing. But I mean, as far as you know, what would happen if she actually gave him a fight? You know how bad he would look.
Of course,
yeah.
Of course. This is a no-win situation for him. That's why I'm mad at her. That's like God bless the dead. Florence Griffith Joyner in her time, the fastest woman on earth. But she couldn't beat Carl Lewis in a race. It is what it is. It's physiology. Now, if a woman challenges a man, that's a no-win situation for the man. If the woman wins, then the man is looked at as garbage. If the man wins, well, he beat a chick. He shouldn't have fought a chick anyway. It's a no-win situation.
Nothing, though. She's good, though. She's really good.
Right. She's good, but if she fought a guy of her height and weight, and he's going all out, physiology saying she might get the break speed off of her.
How big is she? How big is she?
She's like, well, 140 pounds.
How
that.
Tall?
What is she? 5'7"? Oh, she's 5'5". I thought she's 5'7". But anyway, until she beats that steroid freak Chris Cyborg, I ain't taking nothing she say about fighting a man seriously. That's a man for her right there, that chick, Chris Cyborg. She beat that steroid monster, I give her props. But I don't know, Floyd is the most famous fighter right now. She, you know, it's publicity just using his name. But,
and it's good to call him out. Everybody calls him out now who want money and want to fight, i.e. Amir Khan. It ain't happening, bruh.
Yo, Floyd should call her bluff. He should say, I'll fight you in a boxing match first, then an MMA fight, and beat the brakes off of her in that boxing match.
He could beat her with one hand in a boxing match.
She literally wouldn't lay a glove on him. You seen her fight Misha Tate? When they were standing up and striking, Misha Tate was winning. When Misha Tate decided to grapple, that's when she got broken up. Ronda Rousey's hand skills is horrible. But her judo grappling skills is phenomenal.
Yeah, she's nice, man. She impressed me.
Yeah.
I was like, wow. But, I mean, like I said, man, you know, Floyd is methodical with the way he fights. And he frustrates you. He's not going to sit there and he's going to run away from you, the whole thing. So
now, Floyd don't run. Floyd times you. He don't run. Floyd is a savant.
He gets on his bike a lot, man.
Oh, no. That's ring gentlemanship. If Floyd is a foot away from you, you draw a punch and you can't connect. Now, how hard that is to do?
No, I know. I see him. I see what Floyd does. Floyd is, I mean, he's masterful with the way he does.
Methodical.
But, I mean, yeah, but the thing is, you know, Let me ask you guys something.
Sure.
Who would you think would win if he fought Bernard Hopkins?
Well, if they were the same size, I think they would just sit there and stand at each other. I can't call that.
Yeah. You're talking about two defensive boxers, Bernard's a counterpuncher.
Yeah, that would be a boring, ugly fight. That's like Floyd. That's like Floyd and Pernell Whitaker. That's a boring, ugly fight. I wouldn't want to see that.
They both take away their opponent's strengths. So, and they're both of their strengths are predicated on defense. So, two great counterpunches. I'm with Cyclones. I wouldn't want to watch that.
You need a speedy, well-timed guy to beat Floyd. I thought it was Zab Judah, but Zab is a head case.
Nah, Zab Judah's he ain't
been his head case.
I never liked him, man. I was happy when Zab Judah knocked him out.
Maybe when Zab Sugar was Ray. Younger, but then again, Zab's always been a head case.
Like I would want to see Sugar Ray Leonard and Floyd fight. That'd be a great fight.
Yeah, that would be.
And for whatever reason, I think a nightmare matchup for Floyd would be Hearns and Floyd. I would bet money on Hearns in that fight.
Well, he's never fought a rangy dude with power like that.
Yes, he did. He beat what's name? That what's the guy that died?
Well, that was a good fight.
Corrales. He beat the brakes off of Diego Corrales.
What is Diego Corrales Hearns?
Nightmare for him too.
Wabin?
Hagler would be a nightmare.
Hagler's a Swiss Army knife. That's what I want to see. I want to see Floyd fight Tim Bradley. Tim Bradley's like a little version of Hagler. He don't got the power of Hagler, but same kind of style. I want to see that fight, but seeing how he's with Top Rank, it might never happen.
Floyd ain't never fight nobody like that. Unless he knows he can beat you, he won't fight you.
I don't know about that. I don't know about that.
Floyd ain't fight nobody.
Gotta understand it. If Tim Bradley was with a neutral promotional company and he had a great fan base that would bring in money, Floyd would fight him. It's about money. Now, with Top Rank, Floyd is not giving Bob Arum a piece of the pie because Bob Arum already robbed him multiple times. He robbed Oscar De La Hoya multiple times. Top Golden Boy is cutting Top Rank out. That's why Pacquiao's with Top Rank. That fight's not going to happen. Tim Bradley is with Top Rank. That fight's not going to happen. But if Tim Bradley, he signed the extension with Bob Arum, so we'll never see that again. We'll never see that fight.
You know, there are a number of fighters back in the late 80s, early 90s that Floyd may have a problem with.
And of course.
He would have a problem with Benitez. He would have a problem with Duran. He would have a problem with he'd have a problem with Sugar Ray and Hearns, you know, the aforementioned. He might have a problem with that English boy that I was so high on back in Livingston Bramble.
Okay. I think Floyd beats Duran because Duran, he has a hard head and punching power, but he just comes forward. And as Hearns proved, that's bad, but Floyd is nothing like Hearns with the punching power.
True.
But I think Floyd would counterpunch the hell out of Duran. Duran is too slow.
And Duran would no-moss his way out of that fight.
You think so?
Yeah. That's a nightmare matchup for Duran.
I don't want no more of this.
Unlike Sugar Ray, Floyd is never going to engage Duran, ever. So I
don't know. That first fight with Sugar Ray and Duran, I don't know why Sugar Ray chose to try and fight that style, even though it was
he was trying to out-macho Duran. You don't brawl with a brawler. That's bad. That's bad business.
He did his thing though in that fight. He held his own in that first fight. Yeah, you're right.
You don't fight to nobody's strength.
No, you don't.
Boxing is ego.
Yep.
That's true.
When that little voice in your head tells you go at him, you go.
And that's why I think Floyd is better than Sugar Ray. No matter how much the fans boo in the ring, Floyd's not going to change his style. He's going to do what he does. Whereas Sugar Ray would get emotional and start brawling it out. It's the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah,
you got any?
Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead. I know where you were going.
Okay.
Go ahead, brother.
Okay, yeah, you know I'm going. Well, you know, we got like about a little over half an hour. I want to get into some other stuff. Next topic, I want to get into the Jets. Okay. It seems like, hey, yeah, Michael, this is for you, since we got you on the line. You know what I'm saying?
Send Jets, ew.
Yeah, how about that, huh? We're going to be talking about the Jets general manager, John Idzik. He's come under fire recently for his lack of free agent signings, specifically the cornerback position, okay? I want to get everybody's take on this, if possible, so... You know, I don't know who's going to start it off, but, you know what? Since you're the guest, Michael Brown, we're going to let you start it off, man. How about that?
Okay, that's fine. Well, the cornerback position, I think everybody's talking about, Darrell Revis and everything. Mm-hmm. I mean, and who we lost, but it's like, Darrell Revis, you don't know what you're going to get with him.
Okay.
I thought he was a selfish player, but I mean, I understand now why he wanted so much money, because you don't know, you know, your time in the, you know, in the NFL. You don't know what's going to happen. So he went to the Patriots. Now, if you're going to – I don't know who they're looking at now. It's scary to me, because that's a position that we've had and for so long, and we – were good at, but all of a sudden, it's just that now you lost Kamani, you lost
Revis,
you know,
the year before.
Revis, and it's like, okay, well, where you want to go? I think he has a plan, though. I think he's going to pick up somebody, and either he's going to make a trade or something. I don't know.
Okay.
I just think he has some type of plan. You got to give him some type of credit, you know what I mean, to see what he's going to do.
He missed out on a lot of good guys, you know, Rogers, Cromartie, Talib. The Giants signed a couple of guys who were decent cornermen. It's just baffling, and he's got to make a move.
Well, you know what? I mean, here's my take on it, guys. You know, I think, you know, through the years – recent years, we've seen the Jets, you know, want to remain relevant in the press, and they would always make these big free agent signings that, you know, didn't quite pan out to their expectations. I actually like what Idzik is trying to do. Now, I haven't really been a big supporter of him previously, okay, but I actually can, at least I think I can see what he's doing. He doesn't want to make that splash. He's willing to build from within. You know what I'm saying?
And
that takes
draft.
Time. Right, and that takes time. You know, so I'm not really mad at him for not, you know, spending the money and making that big free agency splash and trying to, you know, stay relevant with the Giants and the newspapers and all that. So I'm willing to give him a little time and see what his plan is. You know, and see if it comes to what he wants it to be. You know?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I say.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was mad at him for signing Vic, but then I realized that he signed, like, the reason why he signed Vic for a year is to, that's a decoy, because he's trying to get Jackson to come.
Okay.
And Jackson and Vic are best friends. So I got that. That's cool.
Okay.
Like, okay, I ain't mad at that. And then it's just like, you know, Geno, he's going to be mentored by Vic, which is a good thing. And either way, Geno's going to win, because, you know, this guy's a bandit. He's an accident waiting to happen, so Geno's going to get play. I don't think he's ever played a full season. You know?
One time. One
time. Yeah, so it's just like,
and that was with Atlanta.
Yeah. So I was mad at it, but I was like, I thought about it. I was like, okay, we're going to get Jackson. We got Decker.
Decker.
We're gonna look pretty
good,
man.
That was
a
good
signing. Yeah, we're gonna look pretty good.
But which Deshaun are we getting? You know, are we getting the Deshaun that me and Cyclonus, you know Job? in a season, right, Cyclonus?
I don't know. Vic, I can understand. Deshaun, head case Jackson, nah.
And you just got rid of the supreme head case in Santonio Holmes. Do you really
want to
revisit?
This is his direct descendant right here.
You want to revisit? And they wear the same number. Do you really want to revisit the same player? They're built the same. They sort of play the same.
He admitted that he was jobbing. There's nothing worse than that.
Well, look, and the thing about it is, You got Michael Vick coming in. You got Michael Vick coming in. So I mean, I guess he would, you know, I guess he would talk to him and tell him, look, he's 27 years old, man.
Right. And Deshaun Jackson caused Michael Vick to get hurt. I could catch it, but I'm a drop it. Watch Vick get popped. Come on, man. If I was Michael Vick, I would punch Deshaun Jackson in the face.
Wow.
Yeah. I remember, what was it, Cyclones, where we were watching a game and he was on the screen and they asked him about his contract situation and he basically admitted it.
Disgusting. That's disgusting. That's an untrustworthy man right there. That's a guy you don't really want on your team.
But also, bear in mind, if Philly cuts him, he's not going to be able to get the $10 million or $12 million that he's making this year. If they cut him, he's going to have to sign another deal somewhere, and it's going to have to be for less money. And the Jets are looking to pounce on him.
Well, you know,
they really don't want to make a trade with Philly, though.
Right.
No, they're not doing that. They said no. Woody said that already. He said that in the papers. He's not trading. They're interested in him. But, I mean, you got to think about it, too. Like, you know, like you said, he's not going to get the $10 million. So it's like he has to audition. So if he comes to the – who knows what he's going to sign with the Jets for, if it's a one-year deal, if it's a two-year deal, whatever. But he still has to audition because he is a head case. So he has to show that he's going to come out here and he's going to work and he's going to play. And he's going to have to play for that money.
Not
bad.
Go ahead, R.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was looking at stuff, and, you know, supposedly he's telling his teammates that he wants to stay, and he's going to stay with Philadelphia.
In Philly?
Okay. Yeah, in Philly. You know, he had a talk with the coach, Chip Kelly. You know, but even with that, it still seems to be some kind of cloud of mystery in what the Eagles management wants to really do with the guy. You know, so is he staying? Is he getting traded? Is he coming to New York Jets? You know, this is something that you know, it's like a waiting game, pretty much, you know?
Well, they said they don't want him at all.
Hmm?
I read somewhere they said the Philly don't want him at all. They don't want no
right.
Yes,
right.
Michael is
exactly.
Right. I read that article.
No, and I read the same thing, too. He is right. You know, but I'm just looking at stuff, you know, he was telling teammates he's staying. You know what I'm saying? And he had a talk. He did have a talk. You know, he said he thinks he's going to stay after talk with the coach. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Well, so that's it. It's like a child of mystery.
That's out of the coach's hands. If you know the GM,
well, that's true.
And the ownership, they want to open up some cap space and get rid of him. Although Deshaun had a good year last year, you know, 82 catches, 1,300 yards, 9 touchdowns. He rebounded well and played ball last year. And
right.
With what they bringing in, you know. They brought in what's the running back from New Orleans? Sproles. They brought in Darren Sproles to go with LeSean McCoy. They re-signed Macklin. They re-signed Cooper. Mm-hmm. So they got a lot of weapons. They still have their tight ends.
Yes.
I would want to. I would if you know he I think staying another year would help Philly be a better team next year. Although. You know, I understand Deshaun is ultimately a talented guy. It's just which Deshaun is coming.
Yeah, pretty much. Like Jekyll or Hyde, you know what I mean?
Well, $10 million, I don't think he's going to want to throw that away. You know, in the NFL, that's hard to come by, man.
Mm.
Yeah.
You got it.
And
something
he, And he got most of the guaranteed money he's supposed to get. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes. Which Deshaun Jackson will we get? to the diva or the princess? You know, I'm going to echo Mr. Brown and Big Brother R's comments about John Idzik and his plan. Yes, I was infuriated by him not going after at least speaking to a couple of these big-name defensive backs. And if he's going to execute a plan somewhere along the lines of building a team like he did with Seattle, I'm all for it. In regards to Michael Vick, he's not going to see defenses like defensive sets that are in the NFC, in the AFC. He could be a serious problem for defenses in the AFC.
If he's not injury prone.
Yeah, and if he beats out.
Yeah, as long
Geno.
As he doesn't. Yeah, well, that's what I'm saying.
When Geno gets hurt.
There aren't any. Well, this it's supposed to be an open camp for the quarterback position, so.
Yeah, he's going to win. He's going to win out.
Yes.
And
if
that's,
as long as it's open camp, he's going to be. Yeah, that's the way I see it. And
I think
there isn't a front four in the AFC as aggressive as we have several teams' front fours in the NFC to challenge Vic. That's why I say he's going to be a problem in the AFC. He could be he could be a serious problem.
And you know what? He also targeted the Jets, knowing he could possibly beat out Geno, being that he's played in that system before and knows that system.
Mm-hmm.
Like the back
mm-hmm.
of his hand and flourished in that
right.
season. So,
mm-hmm.
so
mm-hmm.
it was them picked, you know, Morning Wig. I know he had a hand in bringing Vic in. He was like, yo, that's my guy.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if I'm not mistaken.
It's going to be very interesting.
No doubt.
So I'm going to echo my own statement. If Vic gets the quarterback position for the Jets,
mm-hmm.
he's going to be a problem in the AFC for the Jets. He's going to be a problem.
Well, you know what? I'm going to agree with you. You know, only because of the fact that Morning Wig, you know what I'm saying, the OC, that's not
mm-hmm.
with the Jets. You know, you have Vic in place. And if you manage to get Jackson, you know, and one thing I noticed is that Jackson, I think at one point, I think he was within Morning Wig's system when he had, like, his career best, I think it was like a 22 yards per catch or something like that, if I'm not mistaken.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when Vic was throwing the ball to him, you know? So, you know, it's a potential for a really good offense, you know? Definitely. At least vertically, anyway, you know?
But you know what? What I heard, too, I don't know how much truth there is to this. They're talking to MJD as well.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're in serious talk. That's been about a two-week-old story.
Oh, wow.
They are trying to get
okay.
him in.
Now, if they get him,
yeah.
combined with everything that we're talking about, the Jets are
yes,
going
sir.
To be, they're going to be tough, man.
Mm.
They are going to be tough.
Yeah, I would love for them to get a number one back like Maurice Jones-Drew. Also,
yeah.
you know,
yes.
he can catch 40 balls out of the backfield.
Mm-hmm.
Combine
yes.
him with Ivory and Bilal Powell.
Mm-hmm.
That's a nice running back trio.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, get up my notes.
Well, you know what? With that being said, too, gentlemen, is you know, like I said, I do respect what the general manager is trying to do here. You know, but with Rex coaching. You know, basically, right, he's coaching for 2015 because he got that one-year extension. Now, the thing with his defense is, you know, he always has to have cornerbacks that play a really good man-to-man defense. You know, we have Dee Milner, who's there. You know, I think after a year under his belt, I think he'll be improved. You know, but the other side, you know what I'm saying, where that's why I think, you know, it could be potentially problematic. You know what I'm saying?
Well, the secondary has to be addressed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Definitely.
They need to draft some. They need to draft a big hitter who's a safety. Because I'm,
you know,
I'm tired of these guys coming.
They need that corner
year,
too.
2 years. They need a corner. Definitely.
They need a corner.
They need pass rushing too, man. You got to address the pass rush. I don't remember last time they had a good pass rushing.
No, last year Calvin Pace had 10 sacks.
They had a decent pass rush.
Muhammad had 10 sacks.
Yeah.
Up front, they're fine. It's that secondary they need to readdress. You know, we got Kyle Wilson, who's he's not a starting cornerback. He's a slot guy, and he's kind of small. He's a small slot guy, so it has his hands full. Things I've been reading and hearing about him is that he's real methodical, real slow to make a deal.
Mm-hmm.
And
right,
you know, you got to make moves. I look at the New York Giants and look at the moves they made for their defense, and you know, we were on Reese about last year standing. He was a little blasé in free agency. This year he went and, you know, put some pieces together. Not to say that, you know, on paper those pieces look good. We'll have to see what the finished product looks like.
Exactly.
Isaac has to be better at making moves. MJD is out there. You got to make that move.
Well, you know what? Okay, good. I figured.
Oh, I was gonna say, you know, we have to be patient. We don't, you know, we don't understand his plan. We don't know what he's gonna do. And I mean, he has a whole bunch of money to spend. But again, you know, this NFL is different. It's not like, you know, you can't spend, like, you know, you want to spread your money. Just because you have money, you don't want to spend and on everybody, because the NFL is like, you know, people are looking for big paydays because you don't know, you know, longevity in career in NFL is not, that's not a frequent thing. Like, everybody, you know, 5 years and you're done. So it's like,
only quarterbacks are getting guaranteed, you know, most of their money guaranteed and big size, big money contracts.
Yeah, it's probably why he's doing what he's doing.
But
yeah,
no doubt.
I
agree with you, Michael. You know, being prudent, you don't want to spend too much money on the wrong player. Like when Revis went to Tampa Bay and he signed us, $16 million. I forget the money he signed for, but I'm like, they're going to release him after a year or two, and what happened?
Yeah, they released him.
Released him, which I knew was going to happen.
Yeah, but he's smart, though, man. He's smart. He got his money, and he's looking for his future. You know, he's not going to be able to command money like that too much longer, man.
No, he's not.
And he got 12 from the Patriots for this year, which, you know, they're probably going to cut him after this year. Or, you know, knowing Belichick, he'll probably keep him along if he can.
Well, it depends on his play.
Yeah, definitely.
He's a step slow, man. He's not the same. We're going to see if quarterbacks throw in his direction, he ain't the same player no more.
No,
because they ain't, you know, when he was in his prime, they ain't not throwing the ball in his direction.
Exactly.
No.
So
no.
We
you could expect a few more balls thrown his way. They're gonna test that island.
Yeah. So they're definitely gonna test that. But I mean, you know, Revis who used to be, you know, now it's all about Richard Sherman.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else we want to address about the Jets?
Peter need to leave Michael Vick alone. Let it go.
Well, you know what? They not. He's never gonna. That's never gonna stop. And I was talking to people earlier today on Facebook, and guys were like, he brings a circus. I'm like, no. Peter
Tim Tebow brought a circus.
Yeah.
Well, first off with Peter, and I see I got to play the race card now. Michael Vick went to Leavenworth and did almost 2 years. Those dogs got more justice than Trayvon Martin and Emmett Till ever did.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell is Peter complaining about? Like I said, I love dogs, but you can't equate a dog to a human murderer, a human child molester, which Peter always does. Can't do it. On top of that, Mike Vick went to prison. He already went to prison.
And now he's a spokesperson. He's a spokesperson and an advocate against what he was doing. People change. Going to jail would change somebody.
Well, that advocate crap is all bullshit. That's garbage. That's like
he's actually putting in the work, Cyclonus. His videos and other stuff.
Anything
to
keep getting paid.
Hey, you gotta play the political role.
But back to the reality, Peter, find a life. There's real horrible things going on to animals right now. Michael Vick stuff was in the past. There's nothing you could do to change it.
Only reason why that happened to Michael Vick the way it was a racial thing. But it, look where he was, man. He was in the South. I mean, you can't do stuff like that in the South, man.
Well, that's part of the culture.
You lucky they didn't hang him.
That's I have family in the South. That's part of the culture. That's what they do. They even do dog fighting here in New York. So, you know, and I'm not in any way condoning it.
No, I know what you're saying, but see, this is different. You can do that when you can be black and do that stuff when you're not famous. When you're famous,
you're right.
When you're black,
you're right.
When you
I
do
agree.
Stuff like that in the South, what they are, man, they lucky he didn't get hung because it's like, are you serious? Like, I mean, I was on the fan talking about this, and it's like. The man, like you said, you know, to go, you know, to repeat what he said, like, you can't, he did time. Mm-hmm. He lost money. Like, he's out of his profession for this. And it's like, yo, you know, you're going against animals? Like, I mean, come on. It's not, I mean, what he did was bad. But, I mean, come on, man. He shouldn't have been locked up for that. He should have been fined. And he may be suspended for if you want to, you know, suspend him for the season or whatever, but not locked up. That's a little too much, man. He was locked up. He lost his freedom. And they still talking about, oh, I'm an avid dog lover. And listen, look, I mean, you know, I love dogs too, but, I mean, come on. You can't go to jail for it. I mean, that's just too much, man. Most of that stuff was, not even him. It was his people.
Well, God, watch the company
you keep. Funding it.
Watch the company you keep. Watch you let in your house.
Yeah, that's true.
But,
too. Yeah.
And also, they didn't.
Let's go to Ben Roethlisberger, who was accused of rape what 3 or 4 times.
Oh yep. Wow!
Do you hear women groups coming out against Ben Roethlisberger?
wait, Cyclonus. He is born again, saved, married, and has a child. All that other stuff is in the past.
Oh, so grabbing a random tit, that was a lapse in judgment, okay.
You know how it is. You know how that script is flipped.
And he didn't serve not one day in prison, not one day. There's other NFL players that murdered people, whether intentionally or accidentally, and walked. But this guy went to jail for Fido. I love dogs, but he went to jail for Fido.
Yeah. Go ahead.
When I saw somebody, and just say this real quick, when I seen, I forgot who it was, when the NBA player, I mean, the NFL player that was dragging his girlfriend on videotape.
Oh,
to the
Ray Rice.
Yeah. Dude, how do you not go to jail for that?
Yeah,
I saw that.
Dragging your girlfriend,
he's not,
conscious.
He's not going to go to jail. He's going to get a little slap on the wrist because she know that's the money pit. and they in counseling supposedly, so she's on board to keep Ray Rice being Ray Rice.
This goes for any professional athlete. If that's your girlfriend and you're not married and you don't have any children with her and you're to that point, dump her. Move on. It doesn't have to get to that point. You have options. The
yeah,
hell are
ride.
You doing?
Ride like Derek Jeter.
I've never seen nothing like that.
Ride like Derek Jeter. We got one last topic. We're going to talk about Kobe Bryant. I got
Hold on. Before, man. You know, because I had a little breaking news, but you know what I'm saying?
Go ahead.
Real quick. Okay, ready to talk about basketball. There's something going on in Golden State. I don't know if you guys heard this in regards to Mark Jackson. You know, his contract is unsettled. There's a little unsettling situation out there regarding his assistant, Brian Scalabrine, you know? And they were saying that, you know, that it's possible that Jackson might not, you know, might not be coaching Golden State next year. Now, with that being said, Phil might have his eye on this.
I don't know what they smoking in Golden State, but the Splash Brothers, David Lee, that whole crew they got, they play hard, and he has them on the right path.
Well, here's the thing, Mark. Excuse me, Max. Sorry about that. Is that, you know, Jackson is forcing a reassignment of assistant by Brian Scalabrine. Now, the management isn't too happy with that. You know what I'm saying? And then they're saying that they don't want this guy, Scalabrine, to go anywhere. Meanwhile, this guy,
you know,
his contract has not been extended. And from reports that I'm hearing, it's not going to be. So we could be looking at a free agent coach.
Yeah, good. I heard about Golden State, be dumb. Be real dumb like that. Be
they
dumb.
Said they're not happy with Mark Jackson. And they said if he doesn't make it out the first round, he's done.
See, that's a problem for me.
So do you think that, and again, Phil might have his eye on that. He probably does.
I just want him to be in New York because of their names. Phil Jackson and Mark Jackson, the Jackson brothers. Just for that.
Well, Phil said he wants somebody that knows the triangle or be willing to learn the triangle. So I don't know if that's going to work. They were saying that, what was he saying? Steve Kerr was the top candidate and Brian Shaw.
Kurt Rambis.
I didn't hear Clement. Kurt Rambis.
I've heard Kurt Rambis.
And I forgot who, and it's another guy that he's not a big name. I forgot the dude's name though.
We got a caller with their hand up. I'm gonna bring him in. 7891, state your name and where you calling from.
Yo, Mac, what up? Rodney, it's Mr. King.
Hey, man. What's going on, brother?
What's happening, brother? What's happening?
My man, that looks like Tyson Chandler in the house.
No, get it right. He looks like me.
What's up, brother?
Just chilling in the crib watching this Dallas OKC right now. Going into overtime. It's a crispy one. Waiting for the Knicks. I heard you talking about the Knicks and the coaches.
Mm-hmm.
But, man, they need to reach out to Patrick Ewing. Why not? Bring Big Pat back in the organization.
What do you guys think about that?
Dolan won't do it. I don't know. He has something against the big fella. I don't know what it is.
Well, it shouldn't be Dolan's call anymore. Let Phil do
that's
something.
True.
Look, the Knicks been trash since '99. I mean, give or take a couple seasons. What happened in '99? They traded Patrick Ewing. It's the curse of Patrick Ewing, I'm telling you.
I wouldn't bring him as a coach, man.
Bring him back to the organization, though.
Yeah.
I'll
bring him back to the organization. Who else is out there? Van Gundy's out there. Jeff Van Gundy's out there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think he would.
No, that ain't gonna happen either.
Phil got beef.
they clash.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, they talking Steve Kerr, but he's, you know, I don't know. I mean, at the end of the day, Mike Woodson, he's no fool, man. He can learn the triangle quick. And,
man,
I ain't saying he's a bad coach, but something was off this year.
Dude, I don't want no parts of Mike Woodson at all. I want him. I'll pack his bags for him.
For Mike Woodson. Yeah, I mean, he's done. He's done.
Yeah, that's
but,
what I'm saying.
I mean, I
that's
don't
what
think
saying.
It's his fault, though.
Yeah.
But it happens. This is the league. You know, you win or you go sit on your couch and watch somebody else win.
That's true. All had brought up the fact that there's problems in Golden State with Mark Jackson, and he might be a name that Phil Jackson might reach out to. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I mean, Golden State came into the season. What was they talking like? You know, they could challenge the West out there, but where they now? They just fighting for what, a 6 seed? I mean, I don't know. The whole team on paper, they look good, but they're a little brittle, man. You know. Steph ankles is always taped up. You know, Clay Thompson is just that. Clay, you get him wet and he's melting. But, I mean, David Lee is the best player on that team. But Mark Jackson's a great coach. You know, but he ain't lacing them up out there no more. So, you know, you got to have a team where they're in the West is tough. So if Golden State, they'd be what, like a second seed, third seed, something like that. The West is tough out there. There's a lot of teams.
Very tough.
But I think Mark Jackson, he's safe, man. He's safe. Unless they all want to coach for Phil. Because, I mean, I can see that happening. Everybody want to. Yeah. I think everybody might want to coach for Phil. So anybody's really on the table except maybe Popovich and Vogel and Spoelstra. don't.
And Mikhail.
You know, Tom Thibodeau won't come out. Yeah, because the Bulls, Tom Thibodeau ain't really feeling the Bulls right now.
Well, they, you know, you trade Luol Deng, who is his glue guy. You other moves they've made, Rose ain't ready.
I don't think Rose is the glue guy, though. He's not.
No, I said Luol
Deng. Rose is great. Yeah, no, I know you did, but, I love D. Rose. His game is serious, but he's. I don't know. I don't think he's the leader fully that's getting them to there, you know?
Yeah, they need to get rid of Boozer's contract, which is disgusting, horrible, and he's overrated.
Yeah, definitely is.
Mm-hmm.
He's overrated. We know that, but, he got the painted on hairline. That should tell you something.
Exactly.
We got about 2 minutes left. We're going to go into the overtime. We're going to talk some more. I wanted to talk a little college basketball so we can do that. This is In the Paint, the realest show in sports. Max 6'11", Big Brother R, Cyclonus Walker. We on every Tuesday night from 9 to 11. The call-in number is 347-426-3634. My man Crayon is going to take us out, and we're going to see everybody in the overtime. We're going to kick it a little bit more.
Yeah. In the Paint, Blog Talk Radio, and I'm Crayon. New York is filled with ballers with nasty crossovers. Jump shots that pop from half court, a block over. The break's over, the Giants and the Jets going straight to the bowl, Yankees and the Mets rolling. The Rangers and Islanders, and how can I forget the Devils and Brooklyn Nets? You know I rep my Knicks. Brain scans reveal we the most knowledgeable fans. That's why we demand more for sitting in the stands. A lot of cats be hating, who's the best but who's debating? We got a man on the street for sports conversation. In the Paint, Blog Talk Radio. Go from the locker room to your handphone or stereo. Yo, them other sports shows really ain't about nothing. You got a topic, drop it, and it's open for discussion. Let me know, in the offseason, what players should we acquire? Who's hurt? Who should retire? What coach need to get fired? Hey, yo, In the Paint, Blog Talk Radio. All you gotta do is call them once and let them know. And there you go. In the Paint, Blog Talk Radio. Yeah. Once again, giving you the real talk in sports. In the Paint, Blog Talk Radio. every Tuesday at 9 p.m. Catch my brother, Mac611, Big Brother R, Cyclonus Walker. If you want to reach us by email, independentradio@gmail.com, baby. And we out.
Yeah, it's the overtime. When I say the last four digits of your number, state your name and where you from. 9708.
New York.
3776.
Mike from New York.
9972.
Richard from New York.
9405.
Jesse from Connecticut.
What's up, Jesse? I had to break out, so it's us fellas. I wanted to talk a little bit about college basketball and what's going on. Why are there so many upsets this year and last year?
I think the definition of an upset has changed. I firmly believe these mid-majors, their recruiting and the talent is being dispersed to these mid-majors.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The talent is definitely out there. You will have what I've noticed. The differences is the programs and I guess what the coaches do with the teams. They start them off, you know, building a. This is how this team is going to play. This is how we're going to do. This is what we're going to do. We're going to do this. We're going to do that. Do this. You're going to learn 3 or 4 different defenses, or we concentrate on one defense.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen a couple teams play 2-2-1, 1-3-1, a zone, and a 2-3. Mm-hmm. And go back to man-to-man to confuse the offensive prowess of another team. And, of course, then you have a few teams that were like Duke that stay with the man-to-man, but they stink in defensive rebounds here. And Syracuse.
Matchup zone.
They play the
matchup zone.
That 2-3 zone, which is, I think, one of the best zone to play in college basketball because it's in defense and it transitions your offense rather well. But I think what happened with Syracuse, they got nervous.
No, you know what? They weren't hitting their jump shots the whole game.
That too.
And I love the game. The what's the freshman? The point guard.
Jabari.
He had a phenomenal game, and he went from what was working, which was him driving into the paint and scoring, and he took a jump shot. But I'm not mad at that. But what? Because he played such a great game. He kept them in the game. You know, I think
and
he's going to be really, really
good.
CJ
has been exposed.
What's wrong with CJ?
He hasn't played like he did last year. I don't know if defenses have gotten in his face, or maybe he took a bath. Because I didn't get a chance to see a lot of the games early in the year. I don't know if somebody got to his face, he took a bad fall or something, but his aggressiveness, from what I've seen 2 games this past weekend versus from what I saw last year, something happened. Something happened.
Yeah. My thing with the smaller programs now when their players stay more than 1 year, you know, there's a lot of veteran teams out there like Wichita State, which has 7 seven seniors. Other teams, the other smaller school, like a Gonzaga,
Mercer had seven seniors. I was sorry to see them get blown out.
Yeah.
Sunday.
Those teams, you know, that's why you see so many upsets. I was glad Duke lost. Jabari got exposed. I don't know what happened the last game. He got abused. 6 points in the tourney game. Even if you lose, that's not good. That's not good at all. Cyclonus is six, so he had to he dropped off.
Okay. I think one of the best games was Sunday's game, Wichita State versus Kentucky. If these Kentucky boys grew, if those Kentucky thoroughbreds grew from that game, watch out Louisville, I'm telling you. I'm riding Louisville.
I like Louisville. I'm a Patino fan, so I think they're gonna take it. The one and done players, you know, the law of money is calling these guys. That's why they're leaving. And
Can you blame them? Really?
No, I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all. I don't blame them at all. But I was in a – I don't know if you saw today, I was in a big discussion on the NCAA and how they the football players and basketball players are nothing but cattle. And people always want to bring up that, you know, they get in a four-year ride. They get in a free education. They don't send these guys to class. They shouldn't be called student athletes.
Well, look at Bill Maher's statement. I posted that I agree with him too.
When I interact with people and they want to bring up, you know, the student athlete thing, I always go to this little quote. I'm going to read it to you guys. The NCAA rule book is not the United States Constitution. If anything, the rule book supporting the bogus concept of amateur athletics is akin to the laws that supported Jim Crow, denied women suffrage, and upheld slavery. Who should investigative reporters be going after? The agents, the coaches, the players, the schools, the NCAA? The architect of the modern NCAA, the organization's former president, Walter Bias, spelled out all of this in his 1997 Mea Culpa, Unsportsmanlike Conduct, Exploiting the Student Athlete. Bias wrote, "Today the NCAA President's Commission is preoccupied with tightening a few loose bolts in a worn machine, firmly committed to the neo-plantation belief that the enormous proceeds from college games belong to the overseers, administrators, and supervisors, coaches. The plantation workers performing in the arena may only receive those benefits authorized by the overseers." Bias was not and is not a Jesse Jackson sympathizer. Bias is a white, right-wing conservative from Kansas. He was the NCAA's first president from 1951 to 1988 and the sole visionary. He admitted creating a monster. His NCAA memoir was his repentance and call for a fundamental overhaul of a corrupt organization. That's the architect.
Where did you get that post from?
It's on various sites, and I'm gonna get his book because I'm interested in you know, I don't particularly care for the NCAA. I think they should cut some of the pie up with the product, which is the players.
Yeah,
if you can send me a link to that.
Yeah.
You know, post a link on my page. I like to read some of that. Thank you, Mark.
Okay, no problem. Michael, that was you?
Yeah, I was going to ask you a question. I was going to bring up a topic. I was in another sports group, and somebody brought up the question, why doesn't college players get paid to play?
Mm-hmm.
I think that would actually, if the college players did get paid, they can actually pay for schooling, and yes, they can actually finish school and help their families by getting paid, and they wouldn't have to leave so early to go to the NBA.
Yep.
That would be, because, you know, it is a corrupt system, because, you know, instead of getting paid under the table and all of that craziness, like, you know, you would have some type of structure, and they would understand, you know, a lot of these players would understand what it's like to actually be, you know, they would have some type of understanding of what it's like to be coming into their own. And then if they decide to go to the NBA, it wouldn't be so bad, because they would have money already. They wouldn't be, you know, it wouldn't be like an Allen Iverson situation. You know, oh, I'm leaving because of my family, they're broke, and, you know, and I got to go to, and now look at him now. I mean, even though he's not broke, but, you know, he's going to get money when he gets older. But,
yeah, and just think, you, not saying Allen Iverson is a not an intelligent man. You know, I don't know him, but I don't think he had the grades to go to Georgetown. I mean, when I was younger, I didn't know Georgetown was, you know, an academic school, because, you know, as a kid, you know, I'm watching Patrick Ewing and all those guys and David Wingate. You know, I got me a Georgetown starter jacket. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to apply to Georgetown. Even if, even though I went to play at a small NAIA school for basketball, I'm still sitting there going, I'm apply to Georgetown. I know I can't play at that level, but I'm apply to Georgetown. And then I looked in the, you know, I went in my student center at my high school. I'm like, wow, I can't go there. On any level.
Doctors, lawyers, politicians come out of Georgetown, man.
Yeah. Wow. And then as I looked in the book, then I said, wait a minute, I hate Duke, but let me, oh, wow, I can't go there either.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a college thing, man. These are, you know, prestigious colleges, man. Like, you got to have the grades. And I mean, I see what you're saying about Allen Iverson. Allen Iverson was, you know, he went there purely because of his talent.
And I'm not, like, again, I'm not saying he's not a smart man, you know. I'm not saying that, but.
Nah, I mean, I got what you're saying. I mean, but, I mean, look at him. I mean, look, Allen Iverson was a street dude, you know, pretty much. But the thing about it is, you got to realize, you know, you got to call a duck, you know, when you know, he was an extremely talented basketball player, but that's all, that's where it stopped. You know, he was just extremely, he wasn't a smart basketball player, because if he was, he'd still be in the league.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the same thing, but, you know, he falls in that same category as, you know, Carmelo Anthony. You know, Carmelo Anthony doesn't have that time management thing down pat, and that's the reason why he's struggling in his thing. But, you know, if Allen Iverson would have took the time to actually listen to Larry Brown when he was trying to coach him instead of butting heads with him, he would have been a phenomenal athlete, man. And it wouldn't just been a talent, because his heart was ridiculous. And I mean, the talent was, but he just wasn't, he was as dumb as a box of rocks, man, when it comes to basketball, you know? Well, and then that's
low IQ.
A lot of players are like that, and that's why the NBA is struggling the way it is now, you know, because a lot of players rely too much. This generation of players rely too much on talent instead of their basketball IQ. That's a problem now, big problem.
Yeah. Well, you know what? Fundamentals. Now either you shoot a three or you drive to the hole.
Yeah.
Nothing in between.
Yeah, no mid-range shot. You know, that's a lost art, man. Nobody shoots a mid. You know how many times you can shoot a mid-range shot and you know, take the defense off? You know.
Yeah. It's funny. I come from a family that plays basketball, so
mm-hmm.
I got some older cousins. You know, they like 50, but they're tall. And then got me. I'm in my 40s, and I got a couple of cousins. Then one is like 30. He still plays. So we all get together, you know, like at a family out, and we go play some young boys, and we wind up beating them. We'll win just off of us being older and playing, knowing how to play. We'll beat them the first game, the second game, and because we older, they'll beat us in the third game. And then they'll say, yo, you know, you did some things. You just do this and that and that. And then we chop it up with them. And they're like,
yeah, that's good.
And I have friends, a lot of my college buddies and some of my friends I grew up with, a lot of them, some of my high school, old high school teammates, a lot of them are coaches now. So now I've gone to some of their practices and, you know, I brought two on the show before. It's amazing to see the kids don't get the fundamentals and they all try to teach them fundamentals and being high IQ players.
Mm-hmm.
These young boys don't want to do it.
No. You know, if Kevin Durant understood the fundamentals or, you know, like I said, Carmelo Anthony, Russell Westbrook, Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose is a prime candidate. I think Derrick Rose is so severely overrated. And I say that not out of jest, and I'm not saying that because I just, you know, when Derrick Rose got hurt, because right now I call him Stevie Franchise, because that's what he's going to be for the end of his career, because he's not going to be the same player. And, you know, when you see Derrick Rose from before, like he had that first step. Now, you couldn't defend him because he had that first step. He does not have a consistent jump shot. He cannot shoot threes consistently. And he's not a top-level playmaker. You know, and I say this all the time to all these young dudes, what a PG is supposed to do. A PG is supposed to be a playmaker. He's not supposed to be scoring 20 and 30 points a game. You know, he's supposed to score 15 points at the most, and he's supposed to distribute the ball and set up his team.
You know what happened? Know what happened? AI and Stephon Marbury and, you know, Stevie Franchise, those guys are what happened, and that's the curse. Look at, you know, guys are 6 feet, 6'2", 6'3". They built like a point guard, but they wanna get this.
I mean, that's good. I mean, if you need to do it, but you still are supposed to have them. If you're playing the point guard, you have to know what your position is.
Of course, I agree with you.
And you gotta. I mean, look at Rondo. I think Rondo's the best point guard in the NBA. You know, as far as like his playmaking skill, playmaking wise. You know, then you got Chris Paul. But it's like, you know, Rondo is a triple-double, man.
Yep.
He has more triple-doubles in the NBA than, most players? Last year, he led the NBA in triple-doubles.
He'd be really dangerous if he worked on his jump shot. I have a cousin. My cousin is, I'm 5'7". My cousin's about the same size as me. Better athlete than I ever was. Better. We turned him into a better shooter than me. So when he was getting ready to go to college, I said, yo, because he kept saying, I'm going to go to the NBA. He played with Royal Ivy at Cardozo. That's one of his best friends. So I'm like, yo, you should try to go to LIU. That'd be a good school for you. I said, but you need to become a point. You need to be a serious point guard if you want to go to the next level. He never really listened to me. He wound up going to Adelphi. And that coach jerked him out of Delphi. But I was like, yo, you, and his nickname is Madman, so, and that's his basketball nickname, so, you know, I said, yo, you jack too many shots. You know, I know your hops and athleticism is crazy, but you just a nut.
Well, I mean, that's pretty much, everybody wants to dominate the game. And that's, you know, I just don't understand, like, how people just don't pay, especially with the internet now and how easy it is to find out information and go back and see what, you know, their previous mistakes. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
I remember something that stands out, like Magic Johnson, he was talking and he was saying that how one of his coaches was like, yo, man, we all know, you know, they were saying, we all know you can play.
Yeah.
You got to stop dominating the game.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you know, once he learned, because he said once he plays, like once he gets in trouble and he passes the ball, his teammates don't know what to do with it, and they would pass it back to him.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want the ball. And he said, look, you got to stop dominating the game. You have to distribute the ball. And he said once he learned that, he was like, he became a better basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember Mike.
No, I was just going to say, like, and that's what made him a better basketball player, and that's what people should understand. That's the focal point. Like, you have to, you know, learn. You're on the floor for a purpose, and you have to learn what your position is, and you have to excel at it.
Yep.
That's it.
When I was a freshman in college, I didn't get a lot of playing time. But when I got in the game, Mark decided he wanted to, I'm getting light, I'm going to jack me some shots. And my coach was, you know, come sit next to me. I'm like, I just hit two out of three. Why are you sitting me? Sit next to me, because we had a relatively big team, so everything was predicated inside. I suppose to get maybe point guard on our team, you get 10 points, 8 assists, something along that lines. And even younger, I learned, you know, I was always in a rush. As I got older, I understood what my coach was trying to say, you know, slow it down. And these young kids, they want to break ankles and that's it.
Yeah, well, I mean, they don't understand the, you know, this longevity, and they don't know, they just want to be a showboat. Like,
yep.
When you, you know, they don't, well, that's the NBA. The NBA's fault is because, well, actually, that's David Stern's fault, because David
yep.
Stern wanted to, build the team. He wanted to build the organization on fast break basketball and exciting, making it exciting. And, you know, he didn't want to, he downplayed, he frowned upon defense. He wanted
mm-hmm.
people, he wanted a high octane offense. And that's what actually made the NBA worth billions of dollars that it is right now. But it's watered
yep.
down the game.
Oh, yes. I
you know,
totally
and
agree with that.
And that's the problem I had with the NBA about being watered down, because if you're going to do stuff like that, you have to show people what the game is all about. Now, I understand from a business standpoint, which you want an audience to be entertained, and that's great. I understand that defense, you know, slows down the game and then, you know, get bored or whatever. But you have to let these players understand what it's all about and how to win championships. You know,
mm-hmm.
this whole thing, you know, and that's the thing why I don't like LeBron, because they coddle him, you know, and
yeah.
they groomed him, because he's going to surpass Michael Jordan. And I see that, because they are coddling him and they're bringing him and they're giving him everything. Like, he's going to come to New York. I see that. And I see them, and not because I'm a Knicks fan and I want them, because I can't stand, I despise LeBron James with all, you know, with all the fiber in my being. But the thing is, he's going to come for publicity. Just on the publicity side, and just because the NBA wants him to succeed. He's going to surpass. He's going to come to New York, and he's going to be the savior, and he's going to be the messiah next to, in a immortal messiah next to Phil Jackson. And I don't like that, man, because it's just like, what is that teaching the younger generation?
Yeah, yeah. Just the move they made when Chris Paul was going to go to the Lakers, that, you know, the commissioner steps in and voids the trade.
That was bad. That was so bad. And you know what's funny? Like, I'm going to send you the link. I mean, actually, I'm going to send you the link on, because I told you about the video that I did about the corporate bullying video. And I actually had that. I had protesters and, you know, protesting Madison. Ironically, they were protesting Madison Square Garden. And they were like, and one of the signs says free CP3. And that was because of the lockout and all the different things. And they're talking about another lockout in 2016.
Yeah, well, that's going to happen, probably.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, you know, the NBA is just, it's just weird, man. Like, they just need to focus on, you know, the D League is a good thing, but, I mean, they need to put some more emphasis on
development. Yeah. I said that today on Facebook. I said, basically, you know, getting back to the NBA, to the NCAA, give the kids at, you know, the high D1 schools, give them a stipend. If they go to the NBA, they pay that back to the school.
Yeah.
You know, you keep the money, keep the money flowing that way. And you know, like you were saying, all the backdoor deals, guys getting money under the table. You got AAU guys. They basically get in a kid's ear and steer him to a college, and then they make their money, you know, all that. Nobody's getting paid except for, you know, except for the kids.
Yeah.
And they should put an emphasis on the D League and make teams actually, you know, much like a baseball team, let that, you know, each team have one team that they put some money in and put some development in. And it also keeps guys from going to Europe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's.
I agree with that.
True.
I agree with that.
Keeps the talent here.
I agree with that.
Yeah, because everybody goes to Europe. You know, do you know God, Sham God?
Of course.
You remember him? Okay. That happened to be, I don't know him. I know his brother.
Mm-hmm.
He played for who? UConn?
He played I forgot what college he played for. I know he played
Providence.
For the Yeah, Providence.
Providence.
Yeah. Providence?
Yeah, he played in the NBA briefly. He had a brief stint in the NBA. But he's overseas right now.
Making good money.
Yeah, he's making money.
Made a good he's made a nice living.
Yeah, so it's just like, you know, but that, I mean, you shouldn't have to, all these players shouldn't have to be able to, you know, go overseas and you know, or Alimo, you remember Alimo, right? Street basketball player.
Yeah.
Before he passed, he's another one that did that. You know, I knew him too. I went to school with him. But that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, you shouldn't have to go all over the world just to make, you know, money, you know, a significant amount. I mean, you know, they're making a couple of $1,000s, but, you know, it's just like, you shouldn't have to do that. That's just, you know, I mean, he was good Alimore I'm referring to. He was good, but he wasn't good enough to play in the NBA. And that was because he didn't have the fundamentals, and he wasn't he was good. He had the skills, but he didn't have the discipline to play in the
yep.
NBA. You know, and look how long it took Skip to Malou, you know, for
yeah.
him to actually become a decent point guard. You know what I mean? And you know that's a shame, man.
Yeah. Oh well, you know him and Shamgar, they had the great ball handlers and distributors. They couldn't shoot in
mm-hmm.
decent, you know. And that's you know. Starts at that level, you know. Once you learn the fundamentals, I think teaching, like one of my friends, he runs a camp, and he runs a camp in our old neighborhood. And I get to come out. I grew up in East New York, so I get to go back as much as I can, and you know, participate. I got a video I'll send to you that we shot out there. The kids, man, they didn't want to be on camera, really.
Yeah,
I'm like, I brought the cameras for y'all.
Yeah,
they,
that's how you know how to get better.
Yeah, they don't, like, my boy is, him and my other friend, they stay yelling at them. And one of the kids, he's about 6 feet, 5. He's between 5'10", 6 feet. He's going to be a senior. He might be a senior this year, or next year he'll be a senior. So I spoke to him, you know, off camera. I was like, yo, you playing the two? You better learn to be a point guard to go to the next level. He's like, nah, well, I like to shoot. I'm like, I understand that. And he's not super athletic.
Yeah.
But he can shoot. But I'm like, I was like a 5'10 shooting guard who ain't real athletic. I said, yo, you need to work on your conditioning. You a little soft and flabby. So I don't know if he's taking heat because I haven't been able to get back around and actually see him and speak to him. And I'm like, You want to go to the next level, you're going to have to make some changes.
You need to show him Allen Iverson's career. I bet you he'll change then. You know, but,
yeah.
I mean, it's like I said, man, like, you know, it's bad. It's, you know, a lot of these kids, man, it's unfortunate. They're going to, you know, get sucked up in that little, in that hole, in that
mm-hmm.
little, you know, dead zone.
Yeah.
You know, they just don't get it, man. Like, you have to be smart, man. You know, there's a whole, you know, especially if you're 5'10", if you're not even 6 feet, like, you know how many guards there are around? Like, I mean, in New York
yeah.
alone, how many
mm-hmm.
guards are there? Like, what's the chances of you actually making the NBA?
Slim to none.
5'10"? Wow. As a shooting
yeah.
guard? Wow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's what people don't, you know, they don't realize that. Like, they're not realistic. You have to sit here, yeah, I like to shoot, I like to, you got to do stuff you don't like to do, too.
There you go.
Yep.
You barely have point guards in the NBA just at 6 feet. Now you 5'10"? You're a shooting
yeah.
guard? Are you kidding? Are you kidding me?
Look at it, Nate Robinson. Nate, look how many times he's been bouncing around the league. Nate
yep.
Robinson is not bad, neither. He's actually, you know, he's matured into,
mm-hmm.
you know, a pretty, you know, salvageable guard. But
mm-hmm.
he's been bouncing around the league more than anybody.
Yep. And speaking of him, my cousin is built similar, the one I was talking about who's crazy athletic. He's a little
mm-hmm.
bit, he's chiseled like Nate, maybe a little, not as stocky as Nate, but he's one of those
mm-hmm.
chiseled athletic dudes, and
mm-hmm.
I was like, I wish you would have listened to me when I was in your ear.
mm-hmm.
Like,
I mean,
I wish we could
know.
Go back.
Yeah, but you
even his friend Royale, I used to tell Royale, I was like, yo, you better learn to be a one, dude, because you only 6'2", and you ain't growing no more. But he's actually been staying in the league for 8 years, another one he's bounced and bounced around.
Well, that's good. He's fortunate. That's fortunate for him. But, you know, they need to be more, there needs to be more of a vocal standpoint behind all of this stuff. You know, people need to start coming out and start talking about this, man, because these young kids are not getting it. And, you know, whether it's athletes or, you know, people like Nate Robinson or, you know, that's what the NBA should be doing, having people like Nate Robinson and Muggsy Bogues and, you know, well, not them, they should have been doing that when they were popular. I mean, who knows who Spud Webb is nowadays. But, you know, people like him and what was it, Earl Boykins and
Earl
people
Boykins.
Like that. Yeah. You know, those are, you know, these guys, they're, you know, you got a better chance winning a lotto 5 times than, you know, actually making the NBA like they did. So, you know, they need to have, you know, spokespeople like that going around and talking in the NBA, doing little segments and talking about how hard it is to make it in the NBA. And not everybody can be a LeBron James.
Nope, where you just destined and you know, it's written all over you, you can wind up and be Kwame Brown.
Yeah, or I'll give you a better one. How about Harold Miner?
Yeah. You know? He had no clue on how to play in the league. Crazy athletic.
Lawrence Roten, what was it? Lawrence Moten? Moten?
Mm-hmm. Oh,
you
yeah.
know, Syracuse.
Mm-hmm.
And he was nice.
Yeah. In college.
yeah. Or Trajan Langdon. How about him?
Mm-hmm.
What about Billy Owens?
Yeah. Billy Owens, too.
Billy Owens.
He was
6'8".
He was 6'8". Yeah, he was 6'8".
Mm-hmm.
Built similar. Built close to LeBron.
Yep. Had a handle. He could pass.
Yes.
Run the floor and all that.
Yes.
He became a journeyman.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Remember, he used to play for Golden State, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't remember who he played for, but he wasn't in the league very
Golden
long.
Golden State. They made a horrible trade. They draft day they traded Mitch Richmond for him. Bad move. I was young and I was sitting there. That's not a smart move.
Well, I mean,
Golden State traded for Billy Owens?
Yeah, they traded Mitch Richmond for Billy Owens.
Well, Billy Owens, see, Billy Owens was supposed to be, with Billy Owens, the Syracuse, he was supposed, yeah, he was supposed to be like one of the men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He was good on Syracuse, but again,
are you kidding? Shoot.
He didn't pan out.
He couldn't shoot. They didn't have a position for him. I mean, you know, he's 6'8", 6'9". Is he a power forward? Is he a small forward? Is he a two?
Yeah, but you got a good. That's another thing too, man. Like, you know, and I learned a lot of this from you know, the Knicks. These players have to be better groomed. You know, with these coaches and their favoritism and all this crap that goes on, like, you can't do that. Like, you know, I'm giving you an example. I'm using the Knicks because that's, you know, my team.
Your team.
But this happens throughout the whole NBA. You know, Mike Woodson, you know, this is a classic example of what I'm talking about. The Cavs, did you guys see the Cavs game? The Cavs game? Yeah,
watched part of it.
Okay.
I was able to listen to that game on the radio while I was at work.
That was a train wreck, man. I had to stop watching. I started watching Walking Dead because I couldn't take it no more. But the thing the thing about it was this. Mike Woodson got exploited. Mike Brown realized what the Knicks could not do, which is defend the pick and roll and get over screens. And that, well, so of course, that's what he did. So Mike Woodson decides that he's not, you know, he's going to go with his veteran. And he's just not going to, you know, he's not going to change. He's just going to go with his veteran. And it's just like, yo, what, you know, all of a sudden Jared Jack turns into Allen Iverson, 31 points.
And had a career night, which is what point guard's been doing all year on the Knicks.
Unbelievable. I couldn't believe. I was sitting here like, yo. But, you know, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you have all of these players on your bench. And now, mind you, the Knicks have a talented team. They're nowhere near a championship-level team, I mean, by far. But the thing is, they have a talented team. And you got Jeremy Tyler, which gets no burn. You got Torrey Murray. Yeah, that is a defensive dude. He's a defensive guy. But and then you got
what's the name that you brought in from that used to play for the Lakers? Shannon Brown, another defensive athletic guy.
You got Shannon Brown, and then you got the other tall 6'9" dude. I forgot his name, the white guy.
Aldridge.
Yeah, Aldridge. So, I mean, yeah, you got him. So it's like, yo, if you got him playing, and the only reason why he started playing now is because Phil Jackson likes him. But it's just like, yo, you got all these players, you got all these rookies on there, and you're not giving them a chance, and then you put the Sixer game, he puts them in for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
You don't play them all season. You play them sparingly, but.
Or he played them when they had no choice and they played well.
Yeah.
When they got time.
But you're going to put a team that you're going to put rookies in on the floor for 5 minutes when they don't have chemistry? And then almost lose the game? Like, you got to groom, like, you have to groom these kids and let them feel comfortable so they can do what they, you know, do something, you know, and see what they, you know, you can gauge. Okay, this guy, he feels comfortable. He can do this. He can do that. But they're not going to feel comfortable playing on the floor and do what they can do if they don't get the time.
Yeah,
it's disturbing, man. These coaches, man, the favoritism and all this—it has to stop, man. Like, just like, yo, how long is this gonna go on before somebody actually says something about it?
Yeah, that and you know, his defensive pattern. Why are you switching all the time? And you switching with low IQ players who don't talk on the floor.
Yo, man, that just gives me headaches, man. I you know, before the protest, I couldn't watch a game. I couldn't watch it.
There was, before they had the streak, I'm in another, like, a Knicks group on Facebook, and one of the guys was like, he gets all his Knick news from going in the group. And, you know, whatever we post and articles that are being posted. He said he wasn't watching any more games.
Got him blaming.
He said until they won a certain amount of games and then they started the streak. So he's back watching again and he's like, nothing's changed since I stopped watching.
Yeah. Because they don't have, and like I said, this team is not that bad. They should have won close to 50 games, man.
Yeah.
I don't think they would have won 54 at least, but I mean, at least 45 or 48, man.
Yeah,
you know?
They currently, tonight, right now, they're getting, not just split to the game, they're getting blown out by 13 in the end of the second quarter by the Lakers, who aren't playing with Gasol. Oh, no, he is.
Cause he,
that Gasol?
No, he got vertigo. He's not playing.
Yeah.
I just saw him. I was looking on it. He got vertigo.
I'm watching him. I'm like, y'all letting Jody Meeks cut you up?
Dude, listen. Mike Woodson should have been gone. All-star break, man.
Yeah, but who was out there to hire as a coach?
No, forget about hiring. We weren't going nowhere. We wasn't going anywhere. Have somebody else. I mean, they need a new voice, man. Like, that's why
they
team.
Tuned him out. They tuned
the
him
team
out.
Is not playing well because they don't want to play for him, and that's causing a, you know, first thing Phil Jackson said was the atmosphere needs to change. Players need to want to play in that, and the fans need to want to come there. That's what, you know, the whole bullying thing, it was a dismal attitude, I mean, atmosphere there. That's what it is now. They don't like this dude, and it's just like, yo, I mean, I know you're not going to get rid of him now, but, I mean, you should have done it. You should have pulled the trigger on him, but again, here we go with Dolan and his, nonsense about the second chance thing.
And I understand, Mike Woodson is a nice guy. He under other circumstances, he's a all right coach. He's flawed, though.
Very flawed. Anybody that plays on the Red Holzman and Larry Brown and you don't know how to sub, you got issues, man. You should not be in the NBA.
And you don't adjust well. You don't adjust,
I don't get that. I don't. I really don't. I mean, I thought it was, just gives me a headache thinking about it. I'm sorry. But the thing is, I just don't get it. How do you not know how to adjust? How does your rotation be so putrid? And how do you not, you're supposed to be a defensive guy. Why are you switching?
Yep.
Where's your defensive schemes?
He said putrid. Wow.
It is.
He said putrid. Wow.
It is, man. I mean, this dude is bad, man. I mean, you up 17
and
you win by two or one?
He just don't irk me like D'Antoni. No. He's slightly better.
I think he's worse than D'Antoni. I mean, look, you just said that D'Antoni's up by 13.
Now it's 7.
I mean, come on, man. Like, dude, like, how do you sit here and, I mean, this is a team that, this is the coach that he unseated, okay?
Yep. And the Lakers squad is horrible.
They're worse than that. Their organization is worse than the Knicks.
Yeah.
And I don't know how you can get worse than the Knicks.
Yeah, we got a WordPress site. I was thinking about writing an article called Jim or Jim, Who's Worse?
Oh, man.
And compare them. I think Jim Buss is worse. How do you say
he is?
Phil Jackson?
Because he don't like them, and it's a personal thing. See, well, Jim Dolan and Jim Buss are similar people.
That's why they named Jim.
Yeah, I think so. They're similar people because, you're going to say no to Phil Jackson because you don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, it's not about who you like. It's who's going to be the best for your organization. And for and make you relevant.
Yep.
That was just stupid move. It was just dumb. And then just like James Dolan, hiring Isaiah and keeping him on for so long. That was dumb. But, I mean, these are the owners and they do what they want to do because they see what they see fit. Now, this is... I mean, look, me, if it was me, I would have fired Mike Woodson and had Mark Aguirre take over the team.
Mm-hmm.
How much better he would have been, I don't know. But, I mean, anybody's better than Mike Woodson.
Yeah, Yeah, getting back to the other gym. I mean, people try to pull the race thing with Mike Brown. I was like, Mike Brown is just not a good coach to me. He's not.
He's not that bad, man. I mean,
bad,
he was smart enough to win and to beat the Knicks. So he must not be that bad.
He's a good defensive coach. I give that to him. And I think players just don't respect him, like what happened at the end of his tenure in Cleveland and him just coming with that Princeton offense. And you got guys on that team who all can score, you know, from
yeah, but
one.
They couldn't defend worth a damn. So it's like, yo, what good is scoring if you can't defend? That was the problem.
Yeah. And then you go and do a Nick move and you hire the biggest name out there, which was D'Antoni, and I'm like, that, like, I ain't mad at Phil. They said Phil laughed when they told him, you know, we gonna hire D'Antoni over you. I can see him now laughing. Okay.
Yeah, because he knew. He's like, oh, you're telling me that you're going to hire somebody. He knew that franchise was in shambles. I wouldn't want to be why would you want to be a part of that?
Yep. And then I just read today, he said at one point he wanted to come in as a consultant. And Jim Buss shot that down. And how do you say no to somebody who won you 5 rings?
Because he's an idiot, and I don't know what their beef was. Oh no, he don't like him. He don't want him dating. He didn't want him dating his daughter. But
the sister.
I mean, the sister. Yeah, but I mean, the thing is, you know, who cares? Get over it. If your
she
sister,
grown.
Yeah, it's like, you know, you're gonna ruin money in your franchise and organization because of stupidity.
And also, you know,
well, historically, sons have not fared well like their fathers in sports.
Historian friend Richard. Yes, sir. I agree with you.
You know,
except for the Yankees.
Well,
they might
they're
be
getting
accepted.
Better at it.
Well, the Steinbrenners, they're learning. I will give them credit. They're learning on the fly. But obviously Jerry Buss to Jim Buss,
isn't it frustrating?
The guy from the Orioles, what's his name? Who owned those Baltimore teams?
Oh, you got me on that one because I hate the Orioles.
I can't think of his name, and I think his son.
I know what you're talking about, though.
One of the good families, too. And I think in the 70s, the Red Sox, they sucked for a while also, but you know, the family, they hired baseball people. They kind of got their game together.
I think the Rooneys get it with the Steelers, the Maras and the Tishes with the Giants, they get it.
They get it. What's that senator I can't think of? And the same people who at one time owned the Baltimore Orioles, I believe they branched off with the 49ers for a while too.
Mm-hmm.
The Bartolos. I think it was Edward Bartolo. Anyway, but historically, sons have not, when it comes to business, sons have not fared as well as the fathers do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't think they have the passion.
No, and they
I
were,
agree with
like,
that.
Like you said in the show, you know, you were gifted, you know, grandfathered in, inherited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And I saw some pictures when I was doing research for the show. I'm looking at Jim Buss. I'm like, yo, you a weird-looking, funny, crazy-looking guy. By all rights, Jeannie is the, you know, she's been working in the organization for years. She, you know, they're only going off of the what the father put in their will. She should be running the basketball side of the Lakers because she knows what she's doing. But she's on the, they got her doing the business side. Jim is on some other stuff. I don't know if he got a vendetta against his father and want to ruin stuff, because you know that's how some sons are when they inherit things.
Well,
I was going to say I wrote an article. People thought Dwight Howard was staying. I'm like, Dwight is leaving. And I predicted he was going to Houston. I'm like, come on, he ain't staying with D'Antoni and his coaching, you know, the way he coaches and his lack of a use for a dominant center like Dwight. He's leaving. And he said in a meeting, if y'all fire D'Antoni, I'll stay. They said no.
See ya.
Well, Kobe Bryant is a big reason why a lot of that stuff went down too. Cause
that too.
Yeah.
They're gonna cut us off in a minute or so. But Michael, I want to thank you. Yeah, I want to thank you for giving us such a great interview and holding it down with us. We would love for you to come back whenever you feel fit and you have time, and we want to build some more with you.
Yeah,
and,
no problem.
And Rodney and Cyclonus, they said thank you for a great interview as well. You know, they hit me on the hip, gave me text because they had, you know, Cyclonus is fighting a cold and Rodney had to run.
No problem. I appreciate you guys, you know, reaching out to me and supporting the cause and everything.
Yeah.
You know, now that I know about your show, I will, you know, I'll check it out. I'll tune in.
Okay. And Richard, yo, I got to holler at you, brother, offline.
No problem.
I got a master plan.
And with regards to Big Brother R, I'm supposed to give you a case about that breast cancer game. But I'll let that slide for now.
Y'all fell for it. It happened to me, too. I had no choice.
Yeah, okay.
Fellas, y'all enjoy the rest of the evening. Hopefully Blue and Orange can pull it out. They down by like 9, I think, at the half.
Yeah, well, when you got you have an anchor you have an anchor like Woodson stopping you. That's pretty bad. It's just bad.
Yeah.
You guys have a nice night, and you know, thanks for having me. And I hope I hope you much success with your show.
Thank you.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
All right. Peace. Yeah, Richard. Richard, you got him?
Yeah.
I'm going to call you, okay?
Okay.
Is that cool?
Sure.
Okay. I'm going to call you in a minute. All right. Peace.
Mm-hmm.